Navidad. And you're listening to CITR Radio, FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Normally at this time, you're listening to Tyler, Tyler can't make it today, so I, Nardwuar the Human Serviette, am filling in till 3:30 when I will begin my Nardwuar the Human Serviette radio show that happens every Friday, 3:30 to 5 on CITR, FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. To begin Tyler's fill-in show, we played the Ugly Ducklings from 1966 from Toronto, Ontario, with Just In Case You Wonder. Then we followed it up with 1977 punkers from Toronto, Ontario, The Ugly, get it? The Ugly Ducklings from 1966 into The Ugly from 1977, could be 76, and we're going to be able to find out if the Ugly are from 1976 shortly when I ease in my first guest on our Nardwuar the Human Serviette radio show, who should be able to answer all your punk rock questions and mine as well. So that was the Ugly from 1977 with So In Love With You, the Ugly from Toronto, Ontario, and before that, the Ugly Ducklings. And right now, let's go to our caller who we have on the line right now. And who are you? Are you there, caller?
I'm here.
What did we just hear, and who are you?
I am Dick Vane from legendary punk rock zine Soap and Spikes.
Today you are acting as Santa Claus, aren't you? Claus.
Yeah, Claus, yeah.
You're ready to rip into the state of punk rock today, but of course you're the king of all punk media, aren't you, Dick Vane?
Yeah, I would say so, yeah.
And your zine, Soap and Spikes, now not really happening too much, has many answers, though, of punk rock history, etc. And we just heard The Ugly there. When did those guys start? Because you're from Toronto, Ontario, aren't you? Phoning live from Toronto, Ontario, Dick Vane. Right, Dick Vane?
That's right. I'm calling from Toronto, Ontario. Well, just outside Toronto, but close enough.
I think The Ugly that we played there, maybe you can give some background on The Ugly, because it says recorded 1977 for The Ugly. But what's your take on The Ugly? What do you know about The Ugly, Dick Vane?
Well, I know one of the guys, I think it's a singer that passed away a few years ago. He was ended up being a kind of a, was a drunk in Toronto and lived on the roof of the Copa in Toronto and since passed away a few years ago. As far as history, well, one of the legendary Toronto bands along with the Vile Tones and the Mods and, you know, there were so many good bands from Toronto and, yeah, I presume they started in 77 and around there, did a few things and fizzled out like many other bands from Toronto at that time.
When DOA moved to Toronto, I think in like 1977 for a couple months, that was the only band that was kind of friendly with DOA. Isn't that true? The Ugly and DOA kind of bonded, where DOA didn't kind of mesh in with the other Toronto punk rock bands, right?
No, that's true, yeah. And actually, DOA, you probably know this, but people might not know this, but
DOA played with the Misfits, you're going to say, right?
That's right.
I knew you were going to say that because you love Glenn Danzig, don't you? And, of course, you've seen that video footage of him getting punched out, I'm sure you've.
Oh, yeah. I'm surprised it took that long.
What is Soap and Spikes again, for people that don't know what Soap and Spikes is, Dick Vane?
Well, it was just a magazine I started, and, you know, to do interviews with legendary people from 77, or the 70s and 80s scene, and some 90s stuff, and just basically wanted to interview people that I wanted to interview, and hopefully people wanted to read about, and I think I accomplished that. You know, I have no complaints. A lot of people liked it. It discontinued it because it was just, I had felt that, you know, after interviewing Johnny Rotten, it was just like, you know, really, how could I top that, you know? And I might resurrect it one day. It's not really, really a dead issue, but who knows?
Soap and Spikes, Canada's only punk zine that matters. And now there are no more that matter because Soap and Spikes is gone. But Dick Vane is live here on the Nardwuar the Human Serviette radio show on Christmas Eve on the Nardwuar the Human Serviette radio show. Well, kind of the Nardwuar the Human Serviette radio show, filling in for Tyler, who's usually at this time slot. But if you have any questions, punk rock, etc., for Santa Claus, a.k.a. Dick Vane from Toronto, Ontario, from Soap and Spikes zine, please phone in 604-822-2487, UBC, CITR, and Dick Vane will attempt to answer your punk rock questions. My question to you right off the bat there, Dick Vane, is did you like that little connection I did there? The Ugly Ducklings from Toronto to 1960s into The Ugly.
I loved it.
There were some connections between 1960s and 70s rock into punk, weren't there? For instance, like the Vile Tones, the legendary punk band, the Vile Tones. Stephen Leckie had been in some other bands. That's his real name, but Nazi Dog is his punk name. He was in some other bands, wasn't he? Like, he wasn't just first in the Vile Tones. There was some sordid past of Stephen Leckie, wasn't there?
There probably was. You probably know more than I do. I probably do, but it's who knows? I can't remember too much about him. To be honest with you, I know there's some things, but at this point, I don't recall anything. You probably know more than I do.
Yeah, I think he might have been in another band. In other words, the generation of punks that came out of Toronto in 1977, they weren't super young, were they? A lot of them were like art schoolers, for instance, the Diodes, right?
Yeah, I would say most people from San Francisco, London, England, Toronto even, yeah, a lot of them were art students. That's pretty much how they met each other and how they started bands and have an interest in the same kind of, I guess, late 60s music, and then obviously the beginnings of punk is how they formed bands. What I've always read anyway, and when I interview people, that's what they would tell me.
Skipping ahead, Dick Vane, Napalm Death. What can you tell the people about Napalm Death and their connection to punk?
In what sense? Connection to what?
Well, they played with some of the punk bands. Like, they were in there with the Crass. And I was just wondering about Napalm Death. Do you like Napalm Death?
Yeah, I actually toured with those guys didn't tour with them. I saw them a couple times in 1987 when I was in England on their Scum tour, which was their first album they ever put out on the legendary Earache Records. Well, it wasn't legendary then, but what became legendary.
Were they the first death metal band? Were they kind of like early death metal? Is that where it all started, Napalm Death?
Well, I never considered them death metal. When I was over there, they considered that stenchcore, or that's what they considered it over there. It was just an extension of punk rock, really, to me. I would say probably, I can't remember that band from Buffalo, but they're the ones I first heard doing that kind of stuff that were metalheads would have been, I can't even remember their name now.
That's a great name, Stench Rock. I really enjoy that nickname.
Stench Core.
Or Stench Core.
Yeah, that's what they called it over there, and then the Americans and Canadians called it, I can't even remember now, I'm going blank on you here.
And if you want to go blank, please phone in, 604-822-2487, UBCCITR. If you have any questions for Dick Vane from Canada's only punk scene that matters, that's now disbanded, Soap and Spikes, that's UBCCITR. Dick, coming to town shortly, in April, Anti-Nowhere League is coming to the Asphalt here in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. What can you tell people about Anti-Nowhere League?
Actually, I just emailed Animal on his website. I haven't heard back from him yet to find out if they're playing up in this area of town. They're a legendary band, too. Now they have their actual original drummer, PJ, back in the fold, and actually their original bass player that they had before they even recorded is back with them. So I guess you have three of the four original guys now. But I seen them 2002, 2001, and 81 when they came through with the Subs at the concert hall. Still a great band. Still a great band live. And Animal, Nick, his real name, who was a singer, still looks the same. Hasn't aged one bit, that guy. Very nice man.
Does he still wear a cod piece?
Oh, yeah. Certainly does.
That was a big part of their look, wasn't it? The cod piece.
That and his sunglasses.
When other times did you see the Anti-Nowhere League? You were saying you saw them recently at Holidays in the Sun?
Yes, in New Jersey in 2002, September.
Because that's a great gathering of old punk rock bands, isn't it? And has there ever been one in Canada?
No, but Darren's trying to do one here. It's called Wasted now, but it used to be called Holidays in the Sun. Before that, it was called Blank Reading, F Reading Festival, because they used to have the Reading Festival in Britain, but the punk one was the FU, Reading Festival, and then it went to Holidays in the Sun, now it's Wasted. But he's trying to do, on his website, he's trying to get one here, but the problem with doing it here is not many of the bands, if you want to get any imported bands from the States or UK, they have so many problems getting in the country, as you've seen with Exploited trying to get in a year or two ago.
They made it to Vancouver. They made it to the Cobalt. They didn't quite make it out east there, did they?
No. Well, when I talked to the guitar player, Ravi, he said they were suspicious of us and didn't believe we were just tourists. They knew we were a band. We did get in, but when we tried to cross into Canada again, they were waiting for us. They knew our next... he said they had pictures of us. They knew our scheduling. They they caught on to us and they wouldn't let us in. God, they didn't have proper working papers. They figured they could cross the border as tourists and use other people's gear. And obviously it didn't work out that way. And Robbie said they're banned, or he's banned personally from playing Canada for 2 years.
Dick Vane of Soap and Spike scene on Sunday, April 17th, the Anti-Nowhere League are coming to Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Then on Sunday, May 15th, this is all happening at the Asphalt, the Vibrators are coming to Vancouver. What can people look forward to in the Vibrators?
I haven't seen the Vibrators since 99. They weren't very good last time I seen them, but, you know, the first album and V2 is their great record, still great records, very old records, but still great records to this day, have held up well. You know, Pyromania, the first album, and V2, the second album, great records. Recommend you get them if you don't have them. But, hey, exception of one time, I see them, they're okay, but they're still a good band. They're definitely worth going to see.
Some people resented them, didn't they, in the early days, the Vibrators?
Don't know what sense they resented them. I don't really...
Because they were older and maybe from pub rock, you know, they weren't exactly the young punks.
Well, a lot of the bands did that, right? You know, Eddie and the Hot Rods were put in the punk category, you know, even AC/DC were put in the punk category, you know, there was a lot of bands, even the 101ers, which was Joe Strummer's first band, was a pub rock band, you know? I mean, you can't really fault them, but I mean, a lot of people just jumped on it because it was the next big thing. It's like the Monks were, you know, the Strawberries, whatever they're called. They were a hippie band before they quote unquote changed to be a punk band. You know, they're big in North America, but they, you know, they sussed them out over in England and said, you're just a hippie band trying to cash in on punk rock and new wave, and they wouldn't have any of it, which was, or even the Police were considered a punk band. They weren't, in my eyes, a punk rock band. Certainly a lot better than the punk bands that they consider punk rock now, but a lot of bands just jumped on that bandwagon and said, oh, this is the next big thing. Let's get funny haircuts and play three chords and people will buy our records. Well, people pretty much figured out pretty quick who was for real, who wasn't, and we know who they are, so enough said about that.
Well, how about you, Dick Vane of Soap and Spike Zine, if anybody has any questions for Dick Vane of Soap and Spikes at 604-822-2487, UBC, CITR, Dick Vane, a.k.a. Santa Claus. They'll rip one there for you. When you went to see punk rock when you're younger and when you're older, what sort of reaction did you have, or did you see the crowd having towards bands that they didn't think were punk? Like I was talking about, like, resentment and stuff. What bands did you see not going over too well?
In the past or now?
Anytime. Just going to a gig and a band not getting the respect that they deserve, or getting the respect they did deserve. In other words, getting bottled or booed or something like that.
Well, good story I'll tell you. When I went to see the dead, or the pseudo-dead Kennedys in New Jersey, and they were headlining the Sunday night because the festival's Friday, Saturday, Sunday, well, they didn't think too much of Brandon Cruz of Dr. No, or formerly of Dr. No, now of Dr. No again, the original Dr. No from Oxnard.
And just got to interrupt just for a second. They were pretty cool, weren't they? And I think they're still going.
Yeah, the original Dr. No, not the heavy metal Dr. No.
Because they pioneered Nardcore, kind of like, you know, Nardwuar, the human serviette,
right?
Because they're from Oxnard, California.
That's right. There were a lot of great bands from that scene.
Was Brandon in the original Dr. No?
Yes.
Does he still tour with Dr. No, or is that another Dr. No? You're saying there's the metal Dr. No.
Well, that's the Dr. No that signed to Death Records that went metal. But it was the same Dr. No. They just changed their music direction. But Brandon wasn't in the band at that time. He had left by that point.
Of course, he was a child actor in The Courtship of Eddie's Father.
Yeah.
I think you interviewed him in Soap and Spikes,
yes,
didn't
they
you?
Did. Yes, I did.
Did he do anything after he did Dr. No before and Into the Dead Kennedys?
Yeah, he did, but I don't recall. But I know he was doing stuff for South Park at one point as well, doing, I think it was sound for them. He answered that in the interview, but I don't really remember. But I know he did do something with South Park. I think it was sound or something. But as far as bands, I think he did something in between. But I don't recall.
But anyways, you were saying they were at the Holiday Inn, the Sun Festival, Sunday night headlining?
Yes, but see, the thing was, when I had seen him, I walked over to him and I talked to him. And he kind of blew me off and said, yeah, I know who you are, and was being a real dick to me. East Bay Ray was a nice guy, and I went and had a few words with D.H. Pellegro, and he was being a complete dick as well. But as far as musically, you know, they were dead on because it was a Dead Kennedys. But once Brandon Crew started singing, you know, it's not Biafra. And if you ever seen the Dead Kennedys, I did, and you can't replace Biafra. And, you know, they just started throwing rocks and bottles and anything they could get their hands on because they weren't having it. I don't think they should be touring without Biafra because they just shouldn't. As far as I'm concerned, in this lawsuit, I'm not taking sides, but I just think the whole thing's wrong to tour without a singer, especially when he was such a big part of that band lyrically and obviously a great frontman.
Did you see the Dead Kennedys yourself in their prime?
Yes, 1982 in Toronto.
And what do you remember about that show and who played with them?
I don't recall. These youth youths, I think, opened for them. I can't remember. We were going on 23 years ago, Nardwar. I just remember somebody diving from the balcony at the concert hall and Jello stopping and saying, is that guy okay? Because it was, you know, a high balcony. But the guy was okay. It was a great show. And they never came back again. The closest they came here was 85 to Montreal, but they never came back to Toronto. They only played Toronto twice, 81, 82, and that was it. They never came back. Same as Black Flag, you know, 82 and a few times in 84, and that was the end of them, as far as playing up here anyway.
Caller, are you there?
Yeah. Yo, what's going on?
Go ahead to Dick Vane from Soap and Spikes Zine, king of
Soap
all media.
Spikes. Hey, I got two bands in mind from the Western Coast Canadian SNFU DOA.
Yeah.
How about those bands? You ever toured with them or...
No, I don't really. I play drums, but I've never played in a band that actually toured. But that's if you were just playing around here not that long ago. Never went to see them. DOA, I haven't seen. About a year ago. But
you had a great interview with Randy Rampage in your zine, didn't you?
Yeah, Randy and Joey. Yeah, two different issues. Yeah, they were great interviews. Randy was great to interview. Hilarious guy. As Joey, you know.
How are the Western bands regarded in Toronto later on? For instance, like SNFU or DOA. How did they
exactly
go over?
You never hear about them, like, in Toronto and whatnot.
What's that, sorry?
Like in Toronto, it's mostly, like, is SNFU pretty big in Toronto? Or
yeah, at one point they were. I'd say early
in their prime, I guess.
In their prime, yeah, in the early, you know, the early 80s they were bigger. I mean, yeah, you know, same as DOA. Say a lot of the bands, but I wouldn't say they had the rivalry that... you know, like the San Francisco, you know, L.A. scene. I mean, I liked any band. You know, I didn't care where they came from. I didn't believe in the, oh, you're from this part of Canada, you're no good. But
No kidding.
You know, a good band's a good band, you know.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter to me.
Oh, obviously, yeah. Totally, man.
What about when DOA moved to Toronto and you were talking to, like, Randy Rampage and Joey Shithead about that and that the Ugly was the only band that they kind of liked? What was going on there? Why were the Toronto bands so stuck up there, Dick Vane, of Soap and Spice Scene?
I think it's what you said earlier, Narwhal, about the art scene. You know what I mean? Those guys were just freaking Canadian guys, burly Canadian guys out of Vancouver, to, you know, from Burnaby, that, you know, they weren't city folk, I guess you could say, right? They weren't, it was like that in the early 80s, too, where people, if you weren't from Toronto and you were from the suburbs, you were kind of snubbed until you kind of got to know people. But they weren't coming to you with open arms, that's for sure. Even when I started going and seeing bands, it kind of looked at you like, who are you? You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's kind of like that with the Surrey bands here. Like, there's a lot of bands out in Surrey that, you know, that they're all, like, popular out there. But when they come here, they're kind of, you know, the Vancouver bands are kind of like that. They kind of have that same kind of...
Yeah, because, I mean, Vancouver and Toronto, and I guess you could say Montreal, too, or, you know, that's our biggest cities in Canada. I mean, people know of them, and anything in between, people like, you know, the Stretch Marks from Winnipeg, you know what I mean? Great band, you know what I mean? Great band. Seen them once. It's a great band 20 years ago, but it's like, unless you had your nose to the ground, you know, you'd miss those bands in your own country, not alone anywhere else. So luckily you had bands, people like BYO and... Maximum and, you know, a lot of different zines in Canada pushing those things. But again, as far as I'm concerned, it's a good band's a good band. They're worth supporting. Who cares where they're from? If it's your own backyard, I've always been the one who, you know, you should always support your bands as much as you possibly can. Buy their CDs or 7-inches or albums and help them out as much as you possibly can.
Caller, any other questions for Dick Vane from Soap and Spike Zine?
Any other questions? Not too many. I just want to say I think punk rock was probably a lot better to listen to few years ago.
Well, you'd even, I mean, I read, I mean, a good example is I read Lemmy's book, White Line Fever, and he said the same thing about Woody Heaven. Like, he said at one time he could go pick up 100 records and 99 would be good.
Well, like, look at Bad Religion. They kind of, you know, they're still around, but I mean, I still have, like, a lot of respect for them, but they just, they've kind of got a little bit boring, I say. I don't want to kind of trash anything, but they just got kind of boring and overplayed and outplayed. And
well, that's the thing. That's a problem when you get signed to a major label,
yeah.
Right? You're going to get overexposure.
Well, they're on a major label?
They used to be on Atlantic.
They went back to Epitaph.
But they went back to Epitaph. And what happened when they went back to Epitaph? They reverted back to what they usually did when they, you know, stopped with No Control. I mean, I bought everything up with No Control, and
exactly.
I stopped buying their stuff.
Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, I never thought a band like Bad Religion would ever become as big as they are, same as Social Distortion. You know, blows my mind. No fault of the bands, because they really haven't changed that much at all.
And bands like Bad Religion were really big even before they were on a major label. Like, when they were touring Europe, say, like, 10 years ago, Pearl Jam was backing them up, and Pearl Jam was on a major label.
And Concrete Blonde, the girl for that band, she was backing them up, too.
Yep.
All right, well, thank you, caller.
Yeah, thank you.
Keep on rocking in the free world and doot-doot-a-loot-doo.
Doot-doo.
And we have another caller here for Dick Vane from Soap and Spike Zine, 822-247, UBC CITR Radio. Caller, are you there?
I am.
Go ahead to Dick Vane.
Well, just with all this talk about Canadian punk rock, I was wondering who you thought was Canada's best punk band ever.
Period.
Yeah.
That's a tough one. That's a tough one. So as I said, the Narwhal, before I did this interview, when I interviewed Jimmy Zero from the Dead Boys, I said the Dead Boys, as far as I was concerned, was, you know, America's Sex Pistols, and I'd say the Volatones were our Sex Pistols. But that's a tough one. I mean, Volatones are great. Teenage Head are great. You know, DOA, Subhumans, Pointed Sticks.
What about Personality Crisis?
Yeah, they're a great band. Yeah.
I don't know, they had a survey on that... there's that website, The History of Canadian Punk or whatever, and on their survey, I think BC were voted the best.
Yeah, they were great. They were a great band. I've seen them many, many years ago. I mean, that's the thing about all those bands from around here, out west. I mean, Personality Crisis, you know, Stretch Marks, SNFU. I mean, they're just great live bands and did great records. And I find that now these young kids, you know, there's exceptions to every rule, but there seem to be so many more bands that, no matter where they came from, that were just great live bands and put out great records and just unified with everybody, and they're great people. And I just find it now that, you know, it's, you know, people that consider punk rock bands, no matter where they're from, are not punk rock bands. And I mean, nobody's going to sit here and get on the phone and tell me that Avril Lavigne and Simple Plan and...
No, all that shit's a fucking joke.
And Sum 41 and Blink 182 and Good Charlotte are punk rock bands. It's a freaking joke. Because it isn't.
It's the new bad metal. It's the new 80s metal. It's a nightmare.
Well, yeah, now they're saying that 80s metal is now the new classic metal. I mean, that's a joke. And even the 90s, I mean, the 90s haven't even gone past that far. And people are like, now it's like back in the day in the 90s. I'm like, back in the day? It hasn't been the 90s that long ago. It's ridiculous.
Any other questions, caller, to Dick Vane of Soap and Spike Zine?
No, I just play some Personality Crisis.
All right, we'll try to dig some up.
And thanks for calling, brother.
Doot-doot-a-loot-doo.
Doot-doot.
And you're still listening to CITR Radio, FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. A fill-in show for Tyler, who's usually at this time slot. He's away, so I, Nardwar, the Human Serviette, am filling in today. Because my show, The Nardwar, the Human Serviette Radio Show, is coming up, I guess, in about 45 minutes here on CITR, FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. But we have Dick Vane from Soap and Spike Zine. Soap and Spike Zine, your zine is gone now, Dick Vane. It's gone. It's completely out of there. It's no longer available. Are there any other zines like Soap and Spikes around there if people are interested in checking out rock that's cool?
Do you mean from here or anywhere?
Anywhere.
I'd say Razor Cake's a good one to plug, since you do stuff for them, Narwhal, and a good friend of ours, Todd, and a good friend of mine, Don Sacky from L.A., he does reviews, and that's a great zine. Of course, Maximum, a Suburban Voice, I don't think it's going anymore from Massachusetts, but...
How about of the punk history variety? Or does that website, punkhistory.com,
mm-hmm.
But what about the punk history of the printed word? Are there any good zines of the punk history that you like reading about, or any books that you've read recently? You mentioned the Lemmy book.
Yeah, Lemmy, it was okay. The Lemmy book, it wasn't really, it didn't tell me anything I didn't already know, and it didn't really go into deep as much as I thought it would. I got this book, Burning Britain, which is a punk book from, it's called Burning Britain, 1980s to 1984, by Ian Glasper. It's about the UK scene in Britain, which is a very good book if you're into that stuff. It's a very good read. This guy did its, you know, great interviews and tracked down a lot of people, and it's got a lot of great pictures and a lot of great interviews, and it's definitely worthwhile reading if you want to know about the UK scene in the 80s.
The Vile Tones, Dick Vane, 1979, live, Possibilities. I have a track all queued up here of The Vile Tones. What are your dealings with the Vile Tones? Does Nazi Dog Stephen Leckie, does he still have a store? What's the background? Can you give a bit of history on post-Vile Tones and pre-Vile Tones? Well, actually, we don't know about much about pre-Vile Tones.
No,
I was just kind of hinting that perhaps he might have been in a hippie band and think,
probably.
I think he actually was, yes.
Probably. They pretty much were all in those kind of, I think anybody was from the 77 before that were all had long hair anyway. I mean, I'm sure you could dig out many pictures, Joey Shithead and, Johnny Rotten even had long hair. I mean, there's, Mick Jones, all of those guys had long hair before punk rock came around. As far as the Vile Tones, you had a shop on Queen Street called Florida Mall, which was, I guess you could say a fashion kind of store. Not really my cup of tea. It was kind of something I heard about, so I wanted to go see. Kind of talked to him for a little bit here. I mean, he wasn't the kind of, he probably was kind of a character you would have wanted to talk to in those days, but, he wasn't exactly left impression on me when I saw him, which probably would have been the early 90s. I did see them probably about 10 years ago or more at the Opera House. They were great, but as far as what he's doing now, he did another Vile Tones record, which is, I seen one of the videos. As far as I'm concerned, he shouldn't have put it under the Vile Tones because it was absolutely terrible. As far as I know, he's married to her, going out, we're married to some rich girl, and she just supplies with money for these projects that never seem to come out.
And they never really had an official LP, did they? Like, there's been reissues of stuff, but there never really was an official LP, was there?
No, there was two 7-inches, which became a 12-inch, and that's it, and the CD to come out on other people's music, 10 years ago, I guess, in and around there.
These tracks that I'm going to be playing, or this track I'm going to be playing, was recorded at Larry's Hideaway, August 4th, 1979. So would have that been a cool lineup of the Vile Tones? Were they over by then?
No, I wouldn't say they're over. They're definitely, their heyday was a couple of years before that, but I would say it was pretty much intact at one point. And Larry's Hideaway, by the way, is gone, but that was a great venue. They tore that down many years ago, but seen many great bands at that venue.
That's where Slayer learned to hot knife at, at Larry's Hideaway.
That's
right. Larry's Hideaway. And other people's music, is that still going? The record label that put out the Vile Tones, is that still going? Because I put out a lot of great Toronto punk.
As far as I know, no. And I talked to Mickey from the Forgotten Rebels, because that was the label that put out their last album a few years ago. He pretty much disappeared with their money and everybody else's money. So he's gone.
So we're going to play some Vile Tones, and then we're going to follow it up with some Dream Dates. Who are the Dream Dates, and how do they all fit into this there, Dick Vane, Soap and Spice?
Well, Dream Dates was a band from Toronto, a friend of mine. The singer Greg is now a hairdresser. I don't say now. He's probably been one for many years. But they never ever released any material they recorded, I guess, in 79. And then Simon and his partner there in Vancouver put out their stuff on Ugly Pop, which is a great label, and they just did a couple of dates a few weeks ago called Suicide Dates, which was the drummer from The Sinisters, two guys from Career Suicide, another great Toronto band, and then the singer from The Dream Dates, Greg, and they just did some Dream Dates stuff and some covers, which was great, and hopefully see more of them.
So we're going to play the Vile Tones. We're going to play some Dream Dates. But before we get to that, a quick update. Forgotten Rebels, you mentioned them. What's going on with Forgotten Rebels? What's going on with them?
Well, they just got yet another drummer, a drummer from a band. I can't remember recall the name at this point in the game, but Paul Newman from the Doughboys, and he was playing with them briefly. And I seen them once with him, and it wasn't very good with him, which was quite surprising because No Mind, his band before the Doughboys he was in, was great, and the Doughboys were great. So I don't know what happened there. In any case, he isn't with them, and the Rebels, you know, they do the usual play every 3-4 months, Toronto, London, you know, Hamilton, and that's about it. You know, they don't really do much as far as recording. I don't know. On that front, they kind of put records out when they put them out, which is, you know, not very often.
So here we have the Vileptones with Possibilities. And the Vileptones were amazing at one time, weren't they? They were amazing.
Well, certainly.
Well, actually, yeah, they were amazing on the reunion, you were saying. But they really did pioneer the... Like, they had one of the early punk singles, period, didn't they?
Yes. Certainly they did. And they made quite the impression on people outside of Toronto because they did some shows at CBGB's in Toronto in those days. And they went over quite well. Natural fact, Sid Vicious actually got up and played bass and did some tunes with them. And he was actually going to join the band at one point because they were thinking about moving to New York, but they never did anyway. But that's something somebody didn't know. Sid Vicious did a couple of tunes with them at CB's way back when.
What was the problem with all the Toronto bands that they didn't put out LPs? Were they just waiting for a big deal? A lot of the Vancouver bands got on with it, you know, and put out LPs, put out singles. But Toronto bands didn't seem to be as documented. They seemed like they were waiting for the big deal.
I really don't know much about that. I mean, the only band that really did from that era put an album out on a major label was the Dial. It's much like the Dickies in L.A., who was the only quote-unquote punk band that ever got signed to a major label. I don't know. I would just think a lot of those bands, except for the Rebels and DOA and certain other bands, I mean, as far as Toronto, I mean, Teenage Head put an album out. I mean, you know, it's, who knows? A lot of them just imploded so quickly after they formed, you know what I mean? I mean, Stephen Leckie, you know what I mean? The guy had so many drug problems and drinking problems, which I think a lot of them did. It's like Frankie Bennett from Teenage Head. I mean, that guy's got some very bad drinking problems, and I wouldn't be surprised if he's the next on the list.
The Vileptones, live at Larry's Hideaway, August 4th, 1979, followed up by the Dream Dates from Toronto, Ontario, circa 1980 or so. Vic Vane?
Yep.
Yeah.
Again, you're listening to CITR Radio, FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And Nardwuar, the human serviette here, filling in for Tyler. So I, Nardwuar, the human serviette, naturally would have to call up my good buddy Dick Vane from Soap and Spikes fanzine. Dick, are you still there?
I am here.
Thank you for sitting through that. What did you think of that Vile Tones live track there, recorded at Larry's Hive Away?
As far as what I heard, it sounded really good. Considering.
And after that, we played some Dream Dates. That was amazing. What can you say about those guys again? Because that was just incredible. That was a great track, a great unreleased gem that's now been released on Ugly Pop.
Yeah, it's great to see it come out because certainly I always like those guys, but it's better late than never. So hopefully people who heard it will go out and buy it and support a good label like Ugly Pop because Simon's always a good supporter of lost Canadian gems.
Yeah, it looks like they're releasing something else. The Statics. Who were the Statics? Three songs of 1980 vintage punk rock out of Toronto.
Yeah, actually, that came out already. That came out a few years ago. That's a band that came out in, from Mississauga, 1980 Mississauga.
And was this some unreleased recordings, or was it a 7-inch?
It was a 7-inch. It never was released. I think they did one track in some wacky compilation, I guess one of them had found, and they tracked the guys down, and they had obviously recorded some material, so he released it.
Dick Vane of Soap and Spike Zine, you mentioned youth. What were youth like? Because I know they're still kind of around, because the guy Brian, doesn't he run, like, Rotate This record store in Toronto?
Yep, and he used to work at the Record Peddler as well for many years.
Because they were a cool Toronto band, weren't they?
Yeah, they're a great band. Them and Drac Daction were probably, I'm not saying that against the other bands, but certainly Youth and Drac Daction were definitely top dogs because, you know, they used to get all the gigs with GBH and Exploited, and, APB was another good one. There was quite a few good Toronto bands. Chronic Submission was another great band from that time.
The last Pogo movie kind of documented the Toronto punk scene, the first wave of the Toronto punk scene, except a few bands were excluded, of course, like Forgotten Rebels from the last Pogo, right?
That's right.
There was that movie Not Dead Yet. Are you in the movie Not Dead Yet, and is that a good representation of Toronto punk, say, 1983?
I'm not in it, but it's definitely a good movie about a film, video, whatever you want to call it, about that time frame. Well, it certainly was. It was. It's good that somebody took some footage of that era because, you know, like Vancouver in the early days too, they did a lot of video. I mean, the only video you ever seen of any bands from the early '80s here was when much new music would go to Larry's, you know, Film Discharge or the Exploited or Antino League. You know, Daniel Richler was, you know, seemed to be the guy that always was there filming the stuff. So I guess that was his cup of tea then anyway.
Not Dead Yet featured what bands? Like, Bunch of Fucking Goofs were in there, right?
Them, Direct Action. Oh, jeez, I can't remember what else was in there. I haven't seen it in so long, but definitely BFG and Direct Action for sure.
Discharge might be coming to Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, too, I heard, to the Asphalt. Who are in Discharge these days?
Well, it's the original lineup minus the singer. The bass player can't even tour because he can't play outside of the country because of his criminal record. I don't know what the criminal record is, drugs, I have no idea. But if it's Tez and Bones, who are brothers, guitar and drums, Tez and guitar, Bones, and Rainey playing bass, and Tony Rad, as anybody would know him, is from the Vrooker singing, but trust me, I've heard their stuff they've re-recorded with Discharge and him singing, and trust me, it ain't as good as Cal, so my point is I don't see the point of doing it, because without their singer, it just doesn't work.
So you've seen the reunited Discharge then?
No, I haven't. I've heard it, but I've never seen them. No, they haven't played Canada at all, and I don't imagine they ever will. Well, you're saying they will, but, you know, let's just wait and see what happens.
Did they ever play Canada back in the day at all? Dick Vane from Soap and Spike Zine, 822-2487, UBC, CITR. Yes, if you ever had a punk rock question you've been dying to ask, please phone in live here to the Nardwuar the Human Serviette fill-in show, filling in for Tyler, to 604-822-247 UBC CITR. Did you see Discharge way back when?
Yes, they played the Corner there in 1982 in Toronto with Vice Squad opening, and I saw them in 83 at Larry's Hideaway, as you're speaking of, and then RPM, which is now called the Government, for the Grave New World Tour, which was 86, but by that time they had turned really heavy metal and the big hair, and I don't know. The singer refused to do any old material except for one song, and the band had to do their encore set without their singer, which is Cal, the guy that's now not with Discharge, touring. But in any case, it was a good show. I wouldn't say it was good as in comparison to the early 82, 83 shows, but, you know.
Was it pretty packed?
For what, all of them?
For the whole gig, yeah.
For all three shows in those times?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely, yeah. You couldn't, I wouldn't say the Grave New World so much, but certainly 83, 82, they were packed out for sure, yeah.
And you also mentioned Vice Squad. What's going on with them? Becky Bondage, Rauer.
Yeah, Becky Bondage is, well, it's not the original Vice Squad, it's just her. She's basically got a bunch of heavy metal guys backing her up now. I've seen them once in 99 and 17 years before that in 82, but as far as that, it was okay, but I don't know. Heavy metal Vice Squad, please.
Dick Vane of Soap and Spikes Zine, now recently departed Soap and Spikes Zine. Is it hard to track down these old punkers? Do you have any good tracking down old punker stories? Because your zine is filled with so many great interviews and stuff. There must have been some that have gone bad or just some that have taken a long time to actually happen.
I wouldn't say I had any problems getting them or had problems with anybody interviewing. I think Gary Vaughn from Sam Hain Danzig was the only guy that actually interviewed via email that was, like, my question was longer than his answer. So other than that, I would say that was the only one I did that was disappointing.
But your resourcefulness in getting these interviews was quite amazing. Like Johnny Rotten, you did through his web TV show, right? That was what he was doing?
Yeah, it's Rotten Radio and IATA.com through New York, through his home in L.A. Yeah, I just, a friend of mine in England told me about it, and I just phoned him up and told him what I wanted to do, and he said no problem. It was great. So he was very accommodating as far as I was concerned anyway, and it was a great interview.
Was it that easy to get through to him when he was on their web doing his show?
Oh, yeah, I just called him up, and they would just, you know, put me on hold, and he got on the air when he got on the air, and I just asked him I wanted to do this, and he said, no problem. I appreciate the fact that he asked me, and he had no problem doing it for a six-week time. Every Saturday for 6 weeks, I called him up when we did it.
Oh, and, no way. That's amazing.
Yeah, and I just taped it on the phone and then transcribed it once I was finished.
What sort of other people phoned into his show? What did he talk about on his show?
You know, about the Pistols and, you know, the public image and politics of the day. And Chrissy Hynde had phoned up from the Pretenders, and Helen LaTroy, who was in the Great Rock and Roll Swindle, the little person in the movie, she had phoned up. All kind of people from the past had phoned him up. It was great.
Have people refused to be interviewed for Soap and Spikes, or to people that didn't want to be interviewed at all?
Absolutely no. I never had any problems with anybody. Nobody's ever actually refused, no.
How about stuff that you won't do because it said you will never do ska and Soap and Spikes? What's wrong with ska, or you never will do it because there's never going to be another Soap and Spikes? Or there might be another Soap and
Spikes,
you never know. But why no ska?
Well, I mean, if I was going to do anything, I'd certainly track down Sony from the Specials or the English Beat, because I did like those bands and did see those bands way back when, and they were great bands because they fused the element of, you know, reggae and the punk energy, and they were great bands live, and they did great records. But, you know, I don't, you know, as far as bands like NoFX fusing that, I mean, I guess it was okay in the beginning, but it did get out of hand, and it got boring really quick.
What's wrong with the Casualties?
What is wrong with the Casualties?
Yeah, what do you think about the Casualties?
I like the Casualties personally. I mean, I know Jake, the guitarist, and he's a good guy, and they're a good band, and, you know, I think a lot of problems with bands like them, in a sense, is they're emulating something that's past, you know, from the 80s, and they got the image down, but, you know, offense to them, but as far as their songs, they certainly never, you know, matched the bands that they, you know, like from that time era, like the Exploiter, Discharge, or the English Dogs, or whatever. I mean, they, you're not saying they do bad records, but, you know, you got to figure out, Casualties have been around since 90. You know, it's a long time, and, you know, the Exploited and GBH and Discharge certainly, within a couple of years, did a lot of great records, which these bands don't seem to accomplish. And if they do, it's a long time down the road, if they do it at all.
Dick Vane from Soap and Spikes Fanzine, 604-822-2487, UBC CITR, for ask Dick Vane a question. You learn so many little tidbits in Soap and Spikes. Like, I love the stuff I've learned from your zine. There's such amazing little tidbits in there. Like, is it true that Gavin McLeod of the Love Boat's son was in the Surf Punks?
Yep, that's right.
That's a wild connection. And are there any other celebrity punks, aside from Brandon Cruz being in the courtship of Eddie's father?
Oh, I just read something on the internet. They're an old band from San Francisco called The Undead, the original Undead, with the singer Sid Terror. His grandfather was the one who played Nosferatu in the movie Nosferatu way back in the 20s, I guess it was. Because Shrek, I think, is his last name. And in English, it means terror in English, his last name. So that's hence his name, Sid Terror. And he did look like Sid Vicious, by the way.
Wow, that's some amazing OG punk goth credibility. What was the name of that band again?
The Undead.
The Undead from San Francisco. What year was that? Was
77.
That 70s. Did they release anything?
Yeah, quite a few records, actually. Some singles. They got a website. You can look it up. I think it's www.the-undead.com.
Another little thing that I found out in Soap and Spike Zine, Don Bowles of the Germs and Nikki Sixx. What's the connection there? Because Don Bowles said, like, Nikki Sixx stole the logo from the 45 Grave band that he was in?
Yeah, the pentagram. Because the 45 Grave used the pentagram. Well, Diana Cancer used to quote, the singer from 45 Grave used to quote with Nikki Sixx many years ago, and I think Don said he's got one of Nikki Sixx's basses, or she does, or he does, one of the two, I don't remember, but that was that connection there.
What about the Canadian connections for everything? Johnny Rotten, did he have any Canadian connections? Did he talk about Canada at all? Did you mention Canada when you talked to him?
Yeah, he's got a, I don't know if she's alive anymore, but his mom's sister lives in Toronto.
So he's been to Toronto a few times then?
Yes. He always made it a point of going to see her when he came to Toronto. Like, I don't know if she's alive anymore. I know his mom passed away quite a few years ago, but I don't know if she's still alive. But he seemed to love Toronto when they played here in 96.
And Jimmy Zero of the Dead Boys had some Canadian girlfriends?
No, that would have been Johnny Blitz, the drummer who lives here, had the Canadian connection. He had a lot of, I think he married three or four Canadians.
And he's still living happily in Canada?
I don't know if he's happy living in Canada. I saw him at the Rock from the Tombs gig, which is, the Cheetah Chrome from the Dead Boys. There, well, it's him and Johnny's band before the Dead Boys. He was there, but he wasn't playing with them. I don't know. I don't get intimidated by too many people, but he was very intimidating. Certainly doesn't look like he used to look, but, you know, I never seen the guy in person. But, no, I think he's, chasing the dragon, if you know what I'm saying.
And you are Dick Vane from Soap and Spikes Fanzine, 822-2487, UBC CITR. If anybody has any punk rock questions on this punk rock Christmas Eve for Dick Vane from Soap and Spikes Fanzine. And thanks for joining us here today on the Tyler Fill-In Show. The Nardwater Human Serviette Radio Show is coming up, but we're filling in here for Tyler, who broke the Go Team, the band The Go Team, in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada this year. I don't know if he did or not, but he did tell me about The Go Team. But if you have a thing you want to tell Dick Vane, Santa Claus, 604-822-247, UBC CITR. I wanted to also kick into the mods here. What can you tell the people about the mods? I love the guy's voice here from the mods.
What can I tell you about the mods? Well, the drummer, David Quinton, David Steinberg's his real name, he's an entertainment lawyer now, but after he left the mods, or the news as they changed into, he had joined Stiff Bader's in the Dead Boys, and then when the Dead Boys broke up, he ended up doing Stiv's solo stuff. And he played on the Disconnected record. I was actually supposed to interview David Quinton, but I never did ever get around to doing it. But he's an entertainment lawyer now.
And they sound amazing. I love the mods, especially the lead singer's voice. Like, step out tonight! Did he get ridiculed for that? Because that was amazing, his voice. I love it.
I don't know if he ever got ridiculed, but yeah, he definitely had a great voice.
And then I thought we'd play some Weirdos, because you're into the Weirdos. Have you interviewed anybody associated with the Weirdos, the Bags, the Berserms, or the Skulls? Well, I guess you talked to Don Bowles, but anybody in the Weirdos have you talked to?
No, I did meet Nikki a couple times in L.A., and I did see the Weirdos in 1990 in Detroit when they toured with the Circle Jerks and the Circle Jerks 10th Anniversary Tour. That would have been their first tour, even though they started in 77. That was their first U.S. tour. Yeah, they're a great band. They're playing the Wasted Festival in October now in San Bernardino. Hopefully I'll be down in L.A. to see that. But Weirdos are a great band. They're still playing around. It's only two guys. Xander Schloss from the Circle Jerks actually plays bass for them now.
What is the longest running punk band? I heard it was the Attics, or the longest running punk band with the original lineup. Do you know what the longest running punk band is with the original lineup? I mean, aside from the Sex Pistols, I guess, but the longest continuously running band. Do you have any idea at all, Dick V?
I would say definitely the Attics. So there's a lot of bands that have been around that time frame, but as far as original, I mean, GBH, you have three or four original guys, but I mean, I would say probably, you know, that's probably about it, true.
Here's the Mods from Toronto, Ontario, and if you could just keep on the line there, if that's possible. Are you still okay there, Dick Fane?
No problem.
This is the Mods from Toronto, Ontario, followed up by The Weirdos. again, you're still listening to Tyler's Fill-In Show with me, Nardwuar Human Serviette, on CITR FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And joining me still, hopefully he's still there, Dick Vane, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
And we heard some weirdos there. What do you think about that version? Live at the Mask, 1978.
Live at the Mask. Legendary club. Never was there, but it certainly got a lot of stories about that club.
And apparently, it's still there. I think it's still there, because they had like a release party for this CD a whole bunch of years later, like I guess it was 15 or 20 years later or whatever, and they actually went to the building and went to the basement, and there was still graffiti. There was still punk graffiti.
Oh, that's right. You're right.
Left on the wall. Is there still punk graffiti around Toronto? I know there was some ugly graffiti around town. Is there any punk graffiti still around there, Dick Vane from Soap and Spikes fanzine?
Yeah, there's bits and pieces here and there, but certainly not like there used to be.
Are there any punk singles that you still are looking for out of Toronto, or that you've been hunting down? Or
No, I wouldn't say no. I pretty much got everything I've gotten, you know. If I don't got it, I got it re-released on CD, you know what I mean? I'm not about to pay $200 for a single.
Well, what is one of the singles that you're looking for that isn't released on CD? Is there anything you're looking for that isn't released on CD?
No, not really. I wouldn't say. I would pretty much say I got everything that came out from those time frames.
So it's not like Tupac. There's no more Toronto punk still to come out? You know, Tupac just keeps coming out. No, there's no unreleased rare punk out there.
Hey, you never know. They might dig up something, but at this point in the game, I don't know anything about it.
Well, I guess they did that with the Dream Dates, didn't they?
Yeah. But I wouldn't consider them a 77 band, but I mean, you never know, or the Statics, you know? You never know what's going to pop out, you know? It's always great to hear it, though.
What do you think about the Diodes?
What do I think of the Diodes? That was one of the first punk bands I ever heard when I was 12 years old, many, many thousand years ago. I always liked those guys.
Because the Diodes interview you did was incredible, Dick Vane. Like, them talking about playing a show in L.A. with the Circle Jerks, that seems pretty wild. Causing a huge riot or something?
Yeah, but see, there's the same thing you're talking about, art school people. You know, you had the Diodes playing with Circle Jerks, which is a hardcore band. I mean, you know, I don't know who set that one up, but that was bad. That's a match in gasoline, far as I was concerned. And, of course, they didn't like it because it was more hardcore. I mean, that was the same scene in L.A. Once it switched over to Black Flag and, you know, the Circle Jerks and stuff like that after the original 77, most of those people that were in 77 bands, as far as they were concerned, because they weren't doing punk rock anymore, punk rock was dead, but how wrong they were.
The Diodes hung out with everybody, though, didn't they? Like, they even hung out with, like, Wendy O. Williams. They had a lot of friends, didn't they?
Yeah, because they were one of those bands that did, a few nights at Seabees.
And the B-Girls. What can you tell the people about the B-Girls? One of them, I think, dated Stiv Bators, right? Another dead boy connection to Canada.
Yeah, she dated Stiv Bators, and she also dated one of the guys in Eddie and the Hot Rods, too. She got around, if you know what I'm saying. And Nick Jones was another one.
But they were a great band, and they've been re-released by others' people's music, the B-Girls. What do you think about them? Were there any other women involved in the scene at that time?
There was the B-Girls, and there was also the Dish Rags was another one.
From Vancouver, British Columbia,
Canada. That was another one, was a girl band.
But I guess specifically out of Toronto, was there anything else?
I can't recall anything off the top of my head. Really, not that I remember.
And you are Dick Vane from Soap and Spikes, and if you'd like to set Dick Vane straight, please phone up 604-822-2487 and pledge some money to help set Dick Vane straight. 604-822-2487, UBC-CITR. Dick Vane is also an expert on something else that is near and dear to many Canadians. And do you know what that might be, Dick Vane?
No idea.
Spike from Degrassi!
I knew you were going to bring that up.
I'm sorry, I had to. You actually did date. You really did date Spike from Degrassi, right?
Yes, many, many years ago.
And all the punk rock on Degrassi is to do with Dick Vane. Well, maybe not all of it, but you're the one that got her to wear a COC shirt. What was your influence on Spike from Degrassi? And you're not joking here.
I don't know if I got her to wear it. I know I got Reed to give her a t-shirt when we saw him many years ago, but, you know, she was into Billy Idol and the Sex Pistols. That's about as far as it went, but, you know, she was around me. She got into, you know, Sick of It All and, you know, the New York hardcore stuff, and, you know, she went to pretty much anything I went to, you know, no matter what played, Goo Goo Dolls, UK Subs, whatever was playing around those days. You know, she always went, so she got exposed to a lot of stuff that she maybe listens to still. I don't know. I haven't talked to her in years.
So you haven't seen her around at all?
No, I haven't seen her in years.
Are you in any episodes at all, Dick Vane? If anybody's going through Degrassi, the complete edition DVD, would they see Dick Vane at all in there?
Yeah, I was in one episode, yeah. The one where the band, I can't remember the name of the band. Now, there was supposed to be a band that filmed a video at the school, but the band that wasn't actually a band. They never showed it, but I was just in the background being a roadie.
Were you looking punk? How can people identify you?
Tattoos and bleach blonde hair, which is nothing now, but then it was in 1990.
Where did you actually meet Spike from Degrassi?
I met her at a dance club in Toronto back in 89.
Was this when the show was... was she on the show at point?
Yeah, I didn't know who she was, though, until another girl told me who she was. I thought she looked familiar, but, I mean, I was a little bit too old to be watching Degrassi Junior High.
Did you learn anything, Dick Vane, about the inner workings of Degrassi? Did you learn anything about that?
It was good to be on it. I mean, to see how those kind of things operate, how people do a TV show, as well as doing the Jersey video, you know, doing stuff like that. And, you know, it's good to see how it's cool to see how the people do things in that industry.
And you're talking about the band Jersey, because you're in the band Jersey's video, which I'm not sure if it got played that much, but it did get played a bit, didn't it?
It got played a bit, yeah.
They're from Burlington, Ontario. That's where you're from, right?
Yeah.
The Partisans. Tell me about the Partisans. You love the Partisans, don't you?
Love the Partisans. New album out on Doctor Strange, by the way. Great record. Idiot Nation, it's called. Recommend you buy it.
I don't really know much about them. Should I get into them?
Yeah, you'd like them. I would say the early stuff they're a Welsh band from Wales, obviously. They're about my age now. I mean, obviously they're my age then. They're only like 16, 17-year-old kids, and they started when they did their first three singles, and an album on No Future, which is gone now. But you can buy their stuff in CD.
Well, thanks very much for phoning in to the Nardwuar Human Serviette radio show fill-in for Tyler here today. Really appreciate that, Dick Vane, Santa Claus. And I really hope that you can get Soap and Spikes up there happening, or at least you can repossess that domain name so you can put all your interviews up there, because they really are amazing.
Thank you very much.
What else do you have coming up? What gigs are you going to coming up? Anything coming up?
Oh, maybe Soul Distortion again, maybe in February, but maybe the Lorena's, another Toronto, or Hamilton band, it's a girl band.
I saw them, actually, the drummer is from the Forgotten Rebels, right?
Yep.
That was exciting.
That's New Year's Eve, so a week from now, but not much happens around here during the winter. Hopefully the anti-Nori legal head up here in April, who knows? And the Vibrators, who knows? We'll see.
And we're going to end here right now with the B-Girls, and then we're going to go into a song called Punk Rock Christmas by the Ravers. I know you had requested Fuck Christmas by the UK Subs, right? No, that was by Fear, right?
By Fear, yeah.
And the Yobs, Oi Santa. I do have those tunes, but I'm not quite sure about the quality that I got them. They're kind of a bit messed up. But what can you tell people about the Yobs? The Yobs, Oi Santa.
Oh, the Yobs is the boys backwards. They just, it was kind of a spoof band, you know. They just did a punk rock Christmas record. Great record. First one was great. They did another one a few years ago, but it wasn't as good as the first. It wasn't bad, but the first one's definitely, can't do too many of them because it loses something in the, when you try to do something again you've already done.
Well, thanks so much again, Dick Vane from Soap and Spikes Fanzine. Here is the B-Girls to take us out, and really appreciate you phoning in, and have a good 2005. Hopefully we'll hear more from Soap and Spikes.
Thanks a lot, Nardwuar. Appreciate it.
And doot-doot-a-loot-doo.
Doot-doo.
One night.
Christmas this year. There are folks that will change your hairstyle for a day. The Queen will sing anarchy in the UK. And old Mick Jagger will adopt a strangler and swagger. Damned, I say. We play the full wise men in a play. In a play. Yeah, play. It's gonna be a part of Christmas this year. Even Santa's gonna be a sex pistol for a day. Of a Christmas tree swing safe Christmas this year.
What do you want for Christmas, little boy?
I want a dome, no pee, with any of the hot rods on the back. What a carrot chimney so I can kick it in. I want a late guitar, a subscription of Pump Magazine.
What else do you want for Christmas, little boy?
I want 10 copies of Pump Magazine, the Queen with a pinch of sleeve.
With a pinch of sleeve?
Yeah, with a pinch of sleeve.
If you're a good little boy, your wish will come true.
Yeah, then I'll bloody well better. We gonna give you
Again, you're listening to CITR Radio, FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And it's time right now for the Nardwuar to Human Serviette Radio Show. And you just heard right there the Ugly Ducklings from Toronto, Ontario. And we were speaking in that fill-in segment there with Dick Vane from Schope and Spike Schwanzine from Toronto, Ontario. So I thought I'd throw in some more Toronto rock with the Ugly Ducklings doing a live unreleased version of I'm a Man. I know I'm a Man has been played over and over again, but never a live version by the Ugly Ducklings, the legendary Toronto punk band, the Ugly Ducklings, who actually began the fill-in that I filled in for Tyler a little while back with the song Nothing by the Ugly Ducklings. Actually, no, sorry, not Nothing, Just In Case You Wonder. Nothing is the B-side to Just In Case You Wonder, covered by The Cynics many moons ago, who run Get Hip Records, who were kind of associated, well, not really, but who probably helped distribute some Sundays product, and that's what that Ugly Ducklings track was from, a Sundays reissue called Garage Beat 66, Chicks Are For Kids. And before that, we began with the Ravers doing Punk Rock Christmas, and before that, a bit of Diodes from Toronto, Ontario, in honor of Dick Vane from Schopen Spikes fanzine. And before that, the B-Girls from Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And I guess to continue on the Toronto, Ontario, Canada thread, we're now going to play a selection from Dick Vane's personal vault. Well, not really his personal vault, but his personal selector vault. And he would like to hear, Dick Vane told me he'd like to hear, and we didn't get a chance to fit it in there when we were filling in for Tyler, Picture My Face by Teenage Head. And then after that, we're going to go to Toronto again for an interview with The Metric from Toronto. And then we're going to go to Toronto yet again for an interview with Wapper Chaos from Toronto, Ontario, Canada, all live on the Nardwuar to Human Serviette Radio Show, FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. are you?
Emily.
Of?
Metric.
Emily, who'd you have beside you?
My friend Jimmy.
Jimmy.
Jimmy, who else is in the Metric? Who's not here right now?
Josh and Jules are in Metric.
And they're not here right now?
They're not here right now.
They're on the bus.
Emily, right off the bat, I love the way you play keyboards.
Thank you.
Is there a special way that Emily plays the keyboards, Jimmy?
Really well.
Well, aside from that, doesn't she have like an interesting hunch? Don't you have that little hunch?
I am a Muppet.
Oh, can you demonstrate that a tiny bit? Because I love that. I know this is kind of like a fantasy of mine, but like the way, don't you kind of do the...
Just give me a moment.
I'm not making fun of you either. I really do enjoy the way you play keyboards. Work it! Come on! Yeah! That is the special...
Do you realize you are the only person in the world I would do that for?
Well, thank you so much, Emily of the Met...
There's no the.
Okay, Emily of Met... Trick. I noticed what I really like about it. It's the dancing feet.
Yes, it is the dancing feet.
Like the dancing feet, like, because I thought it was the hunch, I forgot about it. That is so good. Now, how long have you been doing that?
Forever.
Like, when did you get inspiration to do that? Like, what was the first thing that inspired you to do that?
I just started, when was it?
It was that we played a show in Los Angeles, and we found a mannequin on the way to the show, and Emily threw the mannequin out into the audience and started humping it in the middle of the
floor. You know, I think humping is really a misrepresentation of the movement.
It's the only word.
As a dancer, I feel as though that word really doesn't do justice to the subtleties of my movements in relation
that word.
To the mannequin. But I do think James is right. It was around that time, a couple of years ago, I found my inner.
Now, Jimmy, regarding Emily here, does she have a dance for every song?
Yes.
But what are some of the dances? Could you demonstrate them?
Oh, that would be tough.
Well, you can probably do Hustle Rose.
I don't know.
The beginning of Hustle Rose?
Yeah, could you?
Do you know the choreography?
Behold the fish. I don't know how it goes. I just know that part. You go like this, and then like this, and then this part.
Limb to limb, fingertip to painted lip. She sways. Arm up. Arms in the air. It was her way up to all the way down to your body. Him said, now that there.
So there really are moves for each song.
I guess so.
That one in particular.
That's amazing. Now, how long have you been doing that, Emily?
Ever since I saw Paula Abdul.
No, do you ever feel like deviating? Like, do you ever, like, cheat
I
people?
I do
the same routine maybe on a couple tunes if people are kind of a bit lazy, they maybe didn't notice that?
In all seriousness, there are constant changes, but there are a few things that remain static, and they have stayed with the show for, like, the last 2 years. But things evolve.
Excuse my ignorance, but Paula Abdul has a dance for every single one of her songs?
I was actually trying to make fun of Paula Abdul right there, kind of trying to be disrespectful to another artist, because I think that's really cool. Like, disrespect is like, fuck it.
And you are Emily of?
Metric.
Emily, are you feeling like an uncooked chicken right now?
Actually, I feel a bit more fit than I did at last writing.
Why do you sometimes feel like an uncooked chicken?
Because if you sit down for a long time in the van and you don't eat and all you do is drink and then eat a power bar and cry, you feel like an uncooked chicken.
Do you feel like an uncooked chicken there at all, Jimmy?
No, I feel pretty cooked.
Now, why does Emily feel more like a chicken sometimes than you? And what could you teach Emily about being on the road? And are you more knowledgeable than Emily? And are you the father figure in the Metric? Oh, sorry, Metric.
Well, yes to all of those, but I wouldn't say that I am any more or less of a chicken uncooked or cooked than
In fact,
Emily.
Joshua said that was an optimistic rendition of what your flesh feels like, an uncooked chicken. It actually feels worse than that a lot of times, like a gelatinous pork residue.
So things are happening really excitingly here for the, sorry, meh.
Trick.
Things are happening really exciting here for Metric. I mean, you guys have been on the Baltic Sea.
It's true.
In boats.
Yeah.
And you're going to be playing the El Rey Theater. Now, are you headlining the El Rey Theater in L.A.?
Yes, we are.
Like, that is pretty impressive, isn't it?
I'm impressed.
Like, from the Baltic on boats to the El Rey. What more could there be for the Metric, Emily?
A lot. People like you not calling it the Metric.
I know, but I'm saying the Metric. I don't mean the Metric. I mean, like, the Metric. Like,
like
how can you not use the word the?
Because because it's not the name of the band, you know.
But, I mean, sometimes you need to use the word Zod just to, like, say stuff. For instance, like, when I write essays, I'm afraid of using the same words over and over again. But there's some word you cannot avoid when you're talking about bands. The.
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 The. The.
But you're distracting from the initial question there, Emily, and that's about the Baltic. What was it like on the Baltic? You were on the Baltic Sea in bunks, in boats.
It was pretty rough, except...
You was asleep, man. Yeah. I was the one that drank my face off. Me and the rest of the band got silly.
Yeah, you'd be sick, actually, drinking on the Baltic, wouldn't you? Like, is there a lot of waves and stuff?
No.
No, that's what everybody does on there.
What other Canadian bands have headlined at the El Rey? Like, I'm not sure, did Broken Social Scene play the El Rey?
No, they played the Henry Fonda.
And what other bands from Canada have played the El Rey in headline? Because it's quite prestigious to be able to do something like that, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess Billy Talent played there, but they opened for the Buzzcocks. That's the show where a hamburger ended up on the drums.
How did that happen?
Really, I don't know that story. Yeah.
What happened, a hamburger on the drums?
Well, I think we were exchanging stories of rowdy crowds, and Ben was telling me that they were really unpleasant people. I suppose he didn't really get what Billy Talent were doing, and they threw food, and it was a hamburger, and there were, like, onions on... The hi-hat.
Wow. I guess that probably sums up the demographic of the Buzzcocks audience. A lot of beer gutted type guy.
Yeah, maybe so, yeah.
For instance, at metric gigs, people throw, green bean?
Panties. Panties.
Denim.
And you guys are
metric.
Now, metric. Here we are, backstage at the Commodore Ballroom. When you guys were on tour, you trashed a band room in Gothenburg. What would prompt you to trash a band room?
Severe alcoholism.
Sleep deprivation and horniness.
Was that the first time that you did it?
I think so. Dentistry theme that evening. There was some dentist...
Because that's pretty mean. I mean, you guys are nice Canadians, or pretty much Canadians.
We just broke a lamp. I mean,
Are you Canadian, Jimmy?
Yes.
Okay, that's good, because there were some weird, mysterious Americans in the metric. Are there still?
Yes, I'm dual. And the other two guys are American.
But, I mean, generally, nice Canadians. And here you are trashing a hotel room in Gothenburg. Gothenburg!
It was a band room, and all we did was break the lamp and
drink
all
the alcohol. Extent to which we trashed it is a reflection of our Canadian-ness.
Exactly.
Because all we did was probably, I think,
nothing
the lampshade
fell off. Nothing broke. All I did was throw an apple out the window and attempt to hit a very old, beautiful statue that I missed.
But what prompts you to do this? I mean, things are good. You're on the Baltic. You're at El Rey. Why'd you need to break?
What are you driving at, Nardwar?
Well, I'm thinking Avril Lavigne probably does more damage than you guys.
Oh.
Baboom. I don't know where that was going or where that was heading. What are you driving at, Emily? You just distracted me for a second there. What are you driving at?
Nothing. I'm having a really good time, actually.
Well, thank you very much, Emily and...
Jimmy.
Of...
Etric.
Metric. Metric, things are going well on this tour, aren't they? The Billy Talent tour. I noticed in the middle, you guys got flown down, is this true, to New Orleans?
Yeah.
Like in the middle of a tour?
Yes.
Now, I may be belittling this, but wait a second. You're in the Baltic, you're trashing band rooms, and then you get flown in the middle of a Billy Talent tour down to New Orleans?
Yeah, it was great. We also went to Miami and Seattle.
This is like in the middle of the tour?
Yeah. Yes.
So does it feel good with all this jet-setting lifestyle?
It does, in fact.
Except when you're on the plane, then it feels bad.
Your neck hurts.
Yeah.
Well, I was thinking about that plane ride, Emily.
Which one?
That trip to London.
Which one?
Your trip to London.
Yeah, what?
I'd like to be on that flight.
What did I do? I can't remember.
Your trip to London.
What trip to London?
The lyric from Metric song. See, I was going
to
say...
tits out, pants down, overnight to London.
Yeah, like, I want to be on that flight. That sounds pretty good.
Good flight.
It was a good flight. Yeah. People getting naked everywhere.
Crazy. Oh, bouncy, man. Bouncy.
Is that positive or negative? Because I didn't know where to take that, Emily, that lyric.
The lyric is a reflection of how far people will go to get attention instead of really representing an actual incident.
Was it wrong of me to take it like, all right, yeah, right? Is that kind of like the frat boy mentality? Did I take it the wrong way? Did I take it the sellout way? Did I fall for the trap, Emily? Do you write many traps like that?
There are tricks and traps all over those songs.
And yes, you fell for one of them.
You're in a leg hold, brother.
Are there any other metric songs that have those sort of traps in there? Lyrics that people take the wrong way?
Yes.
And what might those be?
Well, someone asked us the other day if Combat Baby was about war and peace or heroin. Ask yourself.
Going back to tits, since I guess we can't get away from them, are you allowed to say the word tits on the radio?
Yeah, I wondered about that too, because we had a song, there was something I couldn't say. I couldn't say kill or die or something, but I could say tits, which I think is incredible. Why can you, you shouldn't be able to say that.
Why not?
This is when you played like some sort of festival in Phoenix, right?
Oh, well, that's a different issue. I love that you read the tour diary. I'm really impressed.
Isn't there like some stuff you're not allowed to say at gigs? Like, well, you played a gig in Phoenix and you weren't allowed to say stuff.
Well, in that case, that was it was because it was sponsored. I mean, whenever you're dealing with like big sponsorships, it's horrible because you're completely censored and you're in fact this minute thing under their giant banner. We avoid those kind of shows in general.
But it must be neat to get a list. What was on that list? Like, what couldn't you say or do?
The list was actually never shown to us upon our request.
No, it was just that there was a list, I think, was what we were told.
But you never got to see the list?
Brendan told me some of what it was. You couldn't swear, you couldn't, like...
I insisted that you not see the list.
Oh, that's right. You were trying to protect me, but then I said everything that was on there.
I know, that's what I wanted to
do. It would help to have the list.
Oh, yeah.
No,
you made a mistake, Jimmy.
I wanted her to say all those things.
But then if you wanted her to say it, why don't you give her the list? You could have had the list. You could have read it out on stage and ripped it up like Sinead O'Connor or Patty Schmeiss.
Well, that didn't happen like that, but we still got our asses kicked.
Yeah.
And why was that?
Well, because you can't slam Budweiser when there are huge Budweisers beside your head.
Why did you have to learn the hard way?
Because that's the way we do it here at Metric.
Inc.
Inc.
Metric, you're very wise. You've been on the road, well, quite a bit this year. I guess you're not total road rats, are you? For a long time, you were like computer nerds, weren't you?
Oh, yeah.
Like, you guys were in London.
Nerding.
You were in Toronto.
Nerding out.
You were in Los Angeles.
Nerds.
You were in New York City.
Drinking.
You never really were in Vancouver. When are you going to move to Vancouver?
Actually, I went to school at UBC.
You did?
Yeah, I did 2 years there.
So Vancouver is included in a resume for Metric.
It is, and in fact, there are songs that I wrote here that I think fragments of them made it into that record. I can't think of what they are, fam.
It was an A minor chord in one of the...
Yeah,
songs.
I played this one A minor chord when I was living here, and it ended up in one of the Metric songs. It's really big
good,
in the heart.
Good chord.
So you did a lot of city traveling, but not too much actual touring. Like, this is the year for touring, isn't it?
Well, last year, I was looking at the past shows.
Last July, and it continues on.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you're no Stills, are you? Those guys are working hard, aren't they?
Well, I don't know.
I toured as much as the Stills.
Those guys are sweet, though.
Yep. Love them to death.
Family. But what was... You did the numbers. What was it like?
It was 140 shows in 9 months.
Right. So that's a lot. I looked on there. It was like a couple days off a month.
Okay, you're qualified then.
Yes.
Let me ask you this, Metric, please, if you could answer this question. What is this deal about getting your laundry done at restaurants? Like, you guys have perfected getting your laundry done at restaurants. How does that work? Like, is that like a Chinese restaurant? You throw it, like, in with the wonton, or what's going on there?
All you have to do is flash this badge anywhere you go, and you can have anything you want.
My approach is opposite. You just have to treat it like a VIP situation, even if you're dealing with the head chef at a second-rate restaurant. You just walk through the kitchen. Reds, for example.
Right,
walk through the kitchen, walk into the laundry room, get those socks in there, do your laundry. Walk out with a huge garbage bag full of laundry. Just do it with confidence, and no one will ask any questions.
Because I pictured you just going to a normal restaurant and saying, hey, can I use your laundry machine?
No.
This was more like venues.
Yeah.
How about cooking food? Have you cooked any of your own food at venues that you've played at? You know, unused kitchens?
No. On the bus, we've done some cooking.
I made ceviche in the van.
What is the bus like for making stuff?
It's great. There's a microwave and a fridge.
That's pretty good. And you are Emily of?
Metric.
Emily of Metric. The San Francisco Chronicle says you should, quote, take more drugs.
Yes.
So, are you taking drugs right now?
I refuse to comment on that question.
Well, how do you take a comment like that? Take more drugs. Like, take more drugs, Emily. Is this all this expectation on you? I mean, in 1966 or whatever, Iggy Pop rolled in glass. And since then, everything's been done before. I mean, is it hard to up the ante, Emily? Like, the drug. I mean, all these people forcing you to do all this stuff. What are you going to do?
I think, yeah, the message is the more you self-destruct, the better a musician you are, which is kind of unfortunate because I agree, and yet I respect my family and my liver.
Well, what do you think, though? Like, Iggy Pop rolled in glass. How can anybody top it? Why do you need to take more drugs? How do you take comments like that?
I don't know. I think, actually, you took it out of context. I think I said that I needed to take more drugs, not them. I think I said it in the San Francisco Chronicle.
Oh, sorry.
Stumped the journalist, but regardless, your point is the same, and the question is valid.
Thank you. I really appreciate that comeback. I didn't know where that was going. Thank you. Emily of
Metric. I don't know what to do about drugs, and I don't know what to say about them either, except they seem to have helped some people out, and they seem to have hurt some people, too. And I'd rather not self-destruct, because you get fat, and you're bloated, and you're dumb, and you're sad.
However, it's a bit easier when projectiles are thrown at you when you have a fat audience, right? For instance, yeah. Billy Talon and a hamburger.
That's right.
Jimmy of
Metric.
I was wondering, what is the secret connection, and you too, Emily, between a guy that I don't quite understand? His name is Jack...
Johnson?
Jack Johnson! How is that hippie surfer dude, Jack Johnson, associated with the Metric?
Metric. Here's the thing. We're on a label in Los Angeles that's this big. It's two guys in their house. And they put out one record for Jack Johnson many years ago, which sold... What did they sell? They sold...
Over a million records.
They sold over a million records out of the garage. So since then, they put out the Donnie Darko soundtrack, which in my opinion is a little bit closer correlation to the Metric record. In my opinion, on Everloving, it's the Donnie Darko soundtrack and our record.
Well, then Jack Johnson left the label and went to Universal the years before we had anything to do with him. And the reason we're involved with him is for person.
Have you met him at all, or is he totally gone?
Yeah, he's not around at all, but someone met him at Coachella. He's a really nice guy. Who was telling me?
I just think it's great, like Metric and Jack Johnson, but I also think it's great that you're piggybacking on his success. Like, you're using Jack Johnson, cha-ching, to help further the career of Metric.
I don't think that's actually accurate.
No, not really?
He's gone. He went to Virgin, like, years.
But his record is still in the catalog, and it still sells.
They bought the record off of him. That label has absolutely nothing to do with him anymore.
But it is advertised on a website.
Really?
Yes, it is. But that label's not too uncool, because I noticed it also has Dogtown and the Z-Boys soundtrack. So not only you guys with the hippie surfer Jack Johnson, you're also with Dogtown and the Z-Boys. And I think Jack Johnson is kind of like a surfer-type dude.
I agree.
Well, all right. You know, I mean, we'll talk about it later, but I'm really... All right, I'll call you later. That's getting taken care of.
Okay, it's getting taken down as we speak right now. Any correlation between Jack Johnson and Metric Record? Like, it was right there on the website. I could
it
click on...
It no longer exists ever again.
Thank you so much for clearing that up.
No problem.
One other thing exciting about Metric... is lately, and maybe this isn't too exciting or happy, but you guys have had some unexpected bass solos, haven't you, Emily?
Bass solos?
Unexpected bass solos.
What do you mean?
Bass solos.
What do you mean?
I love bass solos.
Joshua playing his bass?
Yes. When has Joshua had to play his bass recently for an extended length of time on stage? I love bass solos.
What happened? Something happened.
Something happened. What, did you break a string?
Maybe I broke a string.
It wasn't a string. It was... the audience, Ottawa. What?
Ottawa.
Oh, Ottawa.
Do you get it? Do you get what I was trying to ease into it?
Ottawa.
Yep.
Ottawa.
Yeah.
Sorry, I almost spat on you there. Oh, jeez.
Wouldn't be the first time, Nardwar.
Ba-boom. But Emily, please, Jimmy, please explain to me if you could. There was an extended bass solo by the Metric, which is great. People love bass solos. Why did that bass solo happen in Ottawa? It was an extended bass solo.
Because I left the stage.
And why did you leave the stage?
Because the security guards were blushing at the foul-mouthedness of the front row at the show.
And then you left the stage, but then the rest of the band remained, right, Jimmy?
No, I left the stage, too.
Did any of the band return?
I can't... What happened? I came back, water on someone's head, an extended lament of hatred and an apology to Metric fans who had to get beat up. Roll-aids being thrown, and emails saying if they'd had a brick to throw at my head, they would have, and they hope something really bad happens to me and I can never make music again.
But they said that afterwards, though.
Yeah.
Would it have been any other way to defuse the situation aside from the bass solo, and how did the bass solo happen?
The bass solo happened because...
Take us through it.
Everybody left the stage.
Except...
Joshua.
Now, why didn't you grab him and go, hey, come on, leave?
Because I don't, it's up to him.
Everybody
he can
does what they want. Yeah. It's rock and roll.
And he figured at this point the best way to ease, is that the word you used?
Defuse
the situation was to play a bass solo. And it worked magically.
Actually, I read some comments that people were mad. They loved the bass solo, but they're mad there were too many effects on the bass solo.
Really?
They're like, that was a great bass solo. It's the best part of the whole evening. But
The guy put stupid effects on it. Is that how hard it is to break through to the audience? The entire band leaves. You guys are soloing with the bass. I mean, your bassist guy is there, and people are mad at the effects.
That's hilarious.
Is it a no-win situation?
Hilarious night all around. Yes, I think no-win is the right way. That's funny.
Now, was it the first time? I spit on people all the time, inadvertently. Was it the first time you spat on the audience? And did you spit on the audience? And did you spit on the audience in Phoenix? And is this a bad habit?
I think you've spat. Yeah. No, you generally spit.
But I don't think I've spit on anyone.
No.
Except because I had that things that were thrown at my head.
Yeah.
And then I definitely did have a reaction.
Yes.
But I can't remember if it was directly at, like, I don't recall. But there was definitely, like, it's there, you know? And if you get too close, you say something really mean.
I'm not going to say nothing mean. Thank you, Emily of Metric. Where did you learn all this stuff, Emily? Did you learn it from your dad? Because your dad seems like he was a pretty incredible guy. Like, he lent you a PJ Harvey tape?
He made me many tapes, and the PJ Harvey tape was a really precious one. Yeah.
That's pretty cool when the dad turns you on to PJ Harvey.
Yeah, he was always more aware of great music than me.
Have you thought about situations like what happened to Ottawa and how other artists would have reacted? Like, what would have PJ Harvey done, or what would have Billy Talent done? Have you thought of anything about this?
I think that there would have been more security, and I think PJ Harvey would have just left the stage. I don't think she would have come back.
I'm not really sure, and
how do you know?
Sort of
yeah.
Irrelevant.
Yeah.
They weren't there. I was. I'm sure they've been in their own situations, and they dealt with it how they saw fit. So did I.
As we did.
Do you think the Clash, in their prime, or Freddie Mercury, in his, we always was in his prime, opening up for Billy Talent, would have had the same reaction? Would any band be able to conquer that audience?
Well, considering that the whole rest of the tour has been amazing, I think that anybody, yeah, like, people loved our band everywhere except there. I don't know how to, like, incorporate your Freddie Mercury thing into I can tell you, like, that was a freakish night. And the Billy Talent guys were really impressed because they thought it was all a performance. They were like, you guys are so punk rock. And it did. It felt like Sex Pistols 1979.
To me, the most punk rock thing is not necessarily to just keep going no matter what. Don't pay attention to anything that's going on whatsoever. The whole point is, like, I'm going to interact with the room. The room tells me to react a certain way. That's what I'm going to do. If you want me to leave the stage, I'm going to stay and play. If you want me to stay, I'm going to leave the stage. It's like, I'm going to do whatever the hell I want to do up on stage, and that's the point of my performance.
And it was great that Josh did the bass solo, too.
That's what he wants to do, and there you go.
Did you record it? Maybe at the beginning of a new tune. Like,
actually, yeah. No, we didn't record that, but someone recorded everything that was said and transcribed the end of Dead Disco, where I suppose is where I addressed what was happening, and it's really nice on paper. I'll print it. I'll put it on the message board or something.
Just something, one phrase that rings in my mind is that the professionalism is the death of rock and roll.
Do you add new lyrics to Dead Disco every night? Do you adapt it from each town? Because remember Huey Lewis?
I don't know who that is.
The heart of rock and roll.
Have you ever heard of it?
No.
Remember Huey Lewis? Come on. No. He had the biggest... He had the biggest thing. Yeah, in rock and roll. But Huey Lewis.
Yeah.
I want a new drug. Anyways, the heart of rock and roll. He's from the Bay Area. The heart of rock and roll must be defeated. In every city that he played, he inserted the name of the city, and then he gave each city
that
recording.
That's clever and spontaneous.
Yes. Have you thought about doing that in the metro?
Oh, never.
You know, like, the heart of...
Such a good idea.
Like,
oh, my God. I'm totally going to do that sometime.
Yeah, like some customized metric.
Cool. I'll totally do that.
Hi, this is Emily Haynes of...
Metric, and I'm in... Vancouver! Oh my God, I totally
add
get
that
it.
To the Vancouver CD?
I get it. Wow.
Or maybe we change the name of the band to the name of the city every time we go to a different city.
Well, winding up here, Metric, anything else you want to add to the people out there at all?
Whole lot of love.
Why should people care about the Metric? Why should people care?
Dude, it's Metric. Got it? Okay. You don't have to care about us. But we're going to keep doing it. People seem to like the song, so we'll keep playing them.
Hey, my name's not Dude. I just thought I could have a comeback. Am I allowed to have a comeback? Was that okay?
Yes, of course.
How'd I do? How would have you answered that?
Probably the same way.
Okay, yeah. Cool. Thanks so much, Metric. And
to the left. yeah. Then you go for yourself, and then you move to the right. Yeah, if it takes all night. Now come on, baby, get into your slide. Oh, yeah, make it last. You know you scratch just like a monkey. Yeah, you do, you know you do. And then you slide into the limbo. How low can you go? Yeah. Now come on, baby, get into your slide. Oh, yeah, make it last. Yeah, 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 do the Harlem Shuffle. Oh, do the monkey shine. Yeah, 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 do the Harlem Shuffle. Hitch, hitchhike, baby.
Kevin Brereton.
A.K.A.?
Chaos.
Chaos.
Yeah.
Chaos, I was wondering, what's the big deal on MC Murder? Why are you coming down on MC Murder?
I don't know. I think MCs are just evolving. And I think when anytime something's evolving, people sort of get upset about it. But it's okay to get upset and state it, state your case, you know?
Well, I was wondering about MC Murder, because I think there's a connection between you and MC Murder.
Definitely. I think that, you know, I go through that myself every day about not loving hip-hop and hating it and not wanting to be an MC. So part of it is, like, my whole feeling about hip-hop sometimes, too.
Now, is it like the gunshots going off? Like, how many people die on your record, Chaos?
First and foremost, probably me. I'm the first one, I think. It's like I commit suicide every single time I try to do something outside what hip-hop is supposed to be. So I'd say, like, probably the count, dead count's like one dead body.
Now, how does that compare versus a G-Unit record? Like, how many people would die on a G-Unit record?
I don't know if people actually die. I think it's the talking about the people dying that everyone's all into. But, I don't know. Just more hardcore, more fire, more hardcore.
There's a lot of gunshots going off. Are there any gunshots on any of your records, Chaos?
No, I went through that stage already when I used to make, like, 10-minute songs and put gunshots in the background and military sounds behind beats, and I thought I'd make an 8-minute song that changed the world, but right about now, I'm opting for a really strong snare. I think that's like a good gunshot.
I was thinking possibly that you might be influenced by this artist right here, the Mighty Sparrow.
He's a Trinidadian. This is my dad's record crate right here. How did you find this, dude?
What I was wondering, Chaos, is look at the first track here. 10 to 1 is...
Muda.
Murder! So you are down with the MC Murder. Who is the Mighty Sparrow, and how does he relate to Chaos, and how is he the Mighty Murderer?
The Mighty Sparrow is probably the greatest calypsonian that ever came from Trinidad. And I can't believe this dude pulled this record out. And just like, you know, he besides doing Calypso, he used to sing like Frank Sinatra songs over and stuff. So people in Trinidad really respect him. He's mighty because he's versatile.
I love the song titles too. 10 to 1 is murder, and police get more pay.
Yeah, well, you know, that, you know, Calypso used to actually be like quite a folk kind of aspect of Trinidadian culture. It was in Calypso that people expressed themselves and talked about, you know, sociological things through the music. So I haven't heard this record, but I'll check it out.
And that's where your roots are, Trinidad, right?
Definitely, yeah.
Now, how cheap are the records made there? Because it's from Trinidad, and if you look closely, it's like another record underneath it. Right. I don't know if you can actually tell, but they just pasted over top another record.
Yeah, I don't know, man. It just looks like something from, like, 1950 or something. Or maybe it's not even the real record. Maybe, like, the dude who bought it did something. I don't know.
No, this is a legitimate thing. It's just they actually put over another record. See? That's like another record actually on their chaos.
It's underneath there. Comit de Sevilla Zapatito.
Actually, you can actually see what it exactly is right there on the corner. It actually says right up. If we look. Sorry if we just turn around here, chaos. No, it's here somewhere. But, yes, there. No, well, the name's somewhere on there anyways. Yeah. The Mighty Sparrow.
I don't know. Maybe they didn't like it. It seems like a Spanish record. Maybe someone didn't like it and just decided to make Calypso run things, you know?
So is the Mighty Sparrow, is he the main Trinidadian influence of chaos?
No, the main Trinidadian influence would probably be Rudolph Charles, who's my uncle, who he used to make like steel pans, and like he was actually a manager of this band called the Witco Desperados, which in Trinidad there's a huge festival called Panorama that happens every year where all the steel bands compete. And I think my uncle, he used to like sit in his basement and make steel pans. So that was my biggest influence, actually seeing someone make an instrument. It was nuts. It was crazy.
Chaos, regarding Trinidad and Calypso, etc., yourself, are you into the Calypsoing? I heard very early on you were into a group called Double Stuff. What is Double Stuff? What is Double Stuff, Chaos?
I don't know. Double Stuff was like a high school kind of quartet group that I was in.
What's so funny about the Double Stuff?
I don't know, just because it was that kind of a group that
it was like Innocence, wasn't it?
It was kind of, it was pretty corny, you know.
Will there ever be a Double Stuff reunion?
No, hopefully.
So you were singing a cappella then, Chaos?
Yeah, I was. We used to do like just
Boyz II Men.
Not that type of stuff. But
this is your hidden past, Chaos. Come on, Double Stuff.
Actually, we used to do like a song called "Only You." I forget who the group was, but it was also a cappella song. We did like, you know, Christmas assemblies, you know, things like that.
Chaos, you're quite a storyteller, aren't you?
Well, we all are, aren't we?
Were you inspired by the OG storyteller, Slick Rick? What do you think about Slick Rick? What can you tell the people about Slick Rick? He's the OG storyteller.
Yeah, he's definitely mastered the art of storytelling, and my favorite song by him is Hey Young World, where he's talking to kids and basically telling them, you know, to grow up, you know, talking to the streets. He always had a way of getting across to people in a very simple way.
And this particular record, Children's Story.
Yeah, so he's amazing. He's a classic MC, you know.
Well, speaking of New York Chaos, you also do a bit of shout-out on your brand-new CD to Big Daddy.
I didn't say Big Daddy Kane.
I thought there's some Big Daddy Kane.
It was Rakim.
No, you do mention Big Daddy Kane.
What did I mention? Oh, in the rap.
In the rap.
Yeah. I thought you meant at the end of the shout-out. Yeah, Big Daddy Kane, yeah.
Yeah, Big Daddy Kane is mentioned. Don't dispute that there.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, he is mentioned. Now, Big Daddy Kane, what's the importance of the Big Daddy Kane? What can you say about the Big Daddy Kane? Because this guy is where it's at, isn't it?
Yeah, Big Daddy Kane ain't no half-stepping. You know, probably one of the first MCs to put it down in a certain way as far as his flow. Raw. That was like the first song that I memorized by Big Daddy Kane. And he's just a man. He's just
like, you know, he wore the chains?
He wore the chain, but you know what the thing about Big Daddy Kane was ill, and I was saying this the other day, is that he always had one or two songs about the community. Like Lean On Me or like he was like sort of like a Jiggy rapper, but he was smart enough to like put at least a couple songs on his record about the community, and I thought that was always cool about Big Daddy Kane.
Okay, well, he also posed for Playgirl.
Who did? He did.
Big Daddy Kane did.
Yeah, he did that Madonna book too, right?
Yeah, Madonna Sex.
Yeah.
He's now, have you been approached to do anything like that? Would you ever do the Playgirl? Would you ever do that Madonna Sex?
No, I wouldn't do Madonna Sex.
Come on, you must have been propositioned to do a few of those things. I mean, that's pretty brave for Big Daddy Kane to go into Playgirl, isn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, I think he was sort of saying something with the title, with his name there. So I think he was already kind of letting people know what it was about, you know? What he was about.
Chaos, you have a brand new CD out called
Joyful Rebellion.
Called Joyful Rebellion. Are there any promo items for the CD?
Yeah, there's No, there's no promo items.
How come you don't have any promo items? What's going on?
I know, how can you really like promo? If you promo Rebellion, it's not really a rebellion, right?
Come on, all the other rappers have promo items. For instance, Chaos. Look what 50 Cent has. He has a 50 Cent do-rag.
Oh, yeah? That's cool. Maybe we can give it to Eminem.
Baboom! Well, speaking of Eminem, you're dissing Eminem right there, Chaos.
No, I'm not dissing him. I just think that he's a very prolific individual with a lot of different ideas about music.
What do you think about his new joint?
No, you can't diss Michael Jackson, man. I think that's going to start a war. Can't do that. Leave Michael Jackson out, you know.
But is Eminem turning into Weird Al Yankovic?
I mean, I think he was always kind of like, you know, making fun of himself. I just think he's probably so rich now that there's not much to make fun of.
So you say you can't diss Michael Jackson until after the trial, but after the trial you can diss him?
No, I just don't think that you should, you know, if black music and black culture supported you and you're not black, then you have to learn to respect the people in that music that were the cornerstones of that music. Simple. But you know what? Then again, there's freedom of speech, and, you know, he probably is doing it so a guy like Migos gets upset about it. So, whatever. Eminem's Eminem. I think he's very aware of what he's doing, and psychologically, he's a pretty genius guy. I just think, I just love Michael Jackson. I just take very. So Michael Jackson and Stevie Wonder, you don't diss Michael Jackson and Stevie Wonder.
Or Cameo. Chaos, speaking of the genius behind Eminem, he has an amazing marketing team. For his last record, check this out. This is an Eminem urinal pad.
Wow, that's interesting.
Like, that's pretty cool. Like,
So what's the whole point Cameo could get with that? Because they had a red thing, too.
But it's a urinal pad. Like, it's a neat promotional item, isn't it?
What does that do? What is this? What's the point?
A urinal pad. You know, like, it's down in the urinal. And then, like, you lean over.
And you look down, and then
you aim. Cool. I mean, you'd probably like to aim and hit him right now for all the stuff he's doing to Michael Jackson, right?
No, I think the promo item says it all.
But the promo item is quite unique. I mean, we have the 50 Cent do-rags, we have the Eminem urinal pads, but you, Chaos, have nothing.
Yeah, well, minimalism is the best. Yeah.
But it doesn't stop there, Chaos. Do you know there's also the Ja Rule thug-lovin' condom? What do you think about that?
Hey, it is Ja Rule. I don't know. That's his thing. I mean, he's pretty disposable.
I mean, it's some great baboom.
No, it's whatever, you know.
Because, I mean, Chaos, you can create some interesting fantasies here. You have the Eminem urinal pad, you have the Ja Rule condom, and then you have something to wipe it all up with when you're finished.
I don't know if you'd use 50 Cent to wipe up Ja Rule and Eminem, but if you're saying that, then that's cool.
And you are Kay?
Us.
Chaos, I was also wondering about Al Capone. You've been dissing on Al Capone lately, haven't you?
No, I just kind of said that rappers that idolize Al Capone. It's not really Al Capone. I never met him personally. I don't know anything about Al Capone, but I sure know a lot of rappers that want to be like him.
Because when I think of rap, I think of ska. And when I think of ska, I think of Prince Buster.
Who's that?
Do you remember Prince Buster? No. He's a legendary ska artist, and the name of his number one hit in England in the 1960s was...
Probably Al Capone.
Al Capone. So every time you're dissing Al Capone, I'm thinking, how could Chaos diss Prince Buster?
I know, I think, you know, ska music's pretty cool. He probably flipped it. Some of these rappers, they've just been saying the same rap lyric and beat for like the last 5 years about Al Capone. So that's probably the more irritating part of it.
Well, it continues to be irritating when you continue to diss Al Capone there, Chaos, because this band right here, The Specials, do you remember The Specials at all?
Definitely.
The ska band, The Specials, and they actually, on this LP, interpreted Prince Buster's Al Capone as the song...
Gangsters. Yeah.
So indirectly, when you're dissing Al Capone, you're dissing The Specials.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
I mean, because you love ska. You even have a bit of ska in some of your tunes. Don't you have the song Call Me? That's kind of a ska beat, doesn't it?
Maybe a little bit.
What do you think about the ska scene?
Oh, man. I like the reggae, I think, you know.
Because if it wasn't for ska, there would be no reggae.
Right. Yeah, I think it's all... I think everything came from Calypso and the Mighty Sparrow.
Yeah, it all goes back to the Mighty Sparrow.
Yo, because reggae is just, you know, it's kind of like Calypso sped up.
That's but first it was the Mighty Sparrow, then it was ska, right. Then it was reggae.
Right, so you could check the root, you know what I mean? Like... It's good that you pulled out the Mighty Sparrow first, because that's probably where everything's coming
from. It comes back. I guess we could agree to disagree, but please, no more dissing of the Al Capone. At least be specific, like Al Capone.
Et cetera, et cetera.
Except not the Prince Buster.
And not The Specials.
Now, speaking of your good ska-loving friend, Sam.
Roberts.
Sam Roberts, is there any chance you can convince him to do any more ska?
I don't know. I think he's going to... I think his next record is probably going to, you know, venture out into other places. You should talk to him, though. I'm sure he'd, you know, take
it. Well, Tommy Hops aboard the ska bandwagon. What about you, Kevin Chaos? Would you ever do the ska?
Nah, I have a love for reggae, but I think I like to mix, you know, things. I don't ever...
That would be mixing it up.
Yeah, yeah.
You remember that English rapper Long ZD had the song, This Is Ska?
Yeah, it's...
Do you remember that tune?
I don't remember that.
Chaos, you seem to be at every indie rock gig.
Yeah, yeah.
It happens in Toronto.
Right. Not everyone, but a lot.
That's some great support. And on this particular tour, you're taking a local rabbit with you, yeah. Peter Elkis.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's doing like 3 or 4 shows.
So what's it like bringing a local rabbit on tour to open for the hip-hopper Chaos?
I think Pete Elkis is pretty soulful. He has a song called Turn Off the Lights. It's kind of like an old Stax, old soul song. So I think he's going to do well. He did a show, actually, at my record release down at Sunnyside Pavilion. People loved it. He killed it. I think there's that much big difference between a lot of the shows I go to, because all of us grew up listening to different music, whether it was ska, hip-hop. So now you hear a little bit of all those things. Even some people, these independent kids, like their drums are getting a bit more, you know, Pro Toolsy and hip-hop. It's cool. I think everybody needs to mix it up, you know?
Like, Chaos, you're into Cat Power. You're into Matador recording artist Cat Power, right?
Yeah.
Fran Marshall.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What do you like about Cat Power?
She's a beautiful person, beautiful artist.
Did you see her last tour when she was just touring solo?
Yeah, I saw her. No, last show I saw her was over at the Opera House. I think she had like 3 or 4 people in her band.
She's done some gigs where it's just her, yeah. And you can just hear like a pin drop.
Yeah, she does that, man. She's very like, has a crazy relationship with her audience. She just totally like, you know, she's kind of naked up there.
Chaos, winding up here, I mentioned G-Unit right off the bat here.
Sure did.
And how you go over with the G-Unit audience.
Yeah, G-Unit, man, you know, people stick together. I think it's a love for hip-hop. I think people, I can relate to, you know, I bought that 50 Cent record. It's like I related to him as an MC, and I related to his struggle. I don't think there's that much of a difference. People like to polarize, put conscious hip-hop over here and, you know, gangster hip-hop over here. But, you know, Public Enemy was like a gangster hip-hop group simply because they were against the system. I just think sometimes 50 Cent kind of seems like a, you know, a genuine article. There's also people, though, who come out and sort of imitate the struggle. And that happens in all types of music, even conscious hip-hop. There's a lot of people talking, a lot of metaphysical, lyrical, whatever. But, you know, their whole reality might not be about learning about the universe and trying to push things forward. So it's not that big of a difference. I think black people, at the end of the day, you know, sometimes black people just support other black people, and hip-hop is hip-hop. I don't think someone that doesn't like 50 Cent likes 50 Cent won't like what I do, and vice versa. You know?
Yeah, I guess I was wondering, have you had any opportunities to open up for, like, Lloyd Banks or G-Unit or 50 Cent? And how do you think you'd go over? And have you ever been to a gig where an artist like yourself has opened for these artists and maybe not gone over so well or gone over unexpectedly well?
No, I think, you know, Mos Def and I think Talib Kweli, they're, like, friends with Jay-Z. I think, you know, Dead Prez did a song with Jay-Z. It's like people are starting to come together because people don't want to be put in these categories of gangster and hip-hop. And I'm sure if the way my live band sounds now, I'm sure if I did something for any of those bands, it would cool, it would rock regardless. I'm down for that.
Because you are K?
Us.
Now, Chaos, also, G-Unit has developed this groupie love thing where they're starting a porno company.
Right. Yeah.
What do you think about all these porno companies and porno rappers such as your good friend Necro?
Necro. Damn.
Necro from New York.
That's crazy.
I mean, they just go right out there, the most vile and degrading sex lyrics on earth. What do you think about people like that?
I think these guys learned all that from, like, Gene Simmons and shit. I think those guys were the first porno guys. Like, those guys were, like, way before there were rap pornos, there was, like, you know, rock and roll porno guys. We should talk about those guys. It's funny. Like, those guys always probably start the... There's glam rock before there was even glam hip-hop. So maybe they're just copying, like, European society. I don't know. Maybe black people kind of just watch TV and they copy what goes on.
Chaos, you played at Toronto Island.
Yeah, I did. Actually, that was a Sam Roberts Broken Social Scene show, but I went up there for a second with Sam, yeah.
What was that like, and how were you regarded? I understand some kid came up to you and thought you were in the Black Eyed Peas, and you played along with it.
Yeah, it's like people mistake. You know how people are. It's like they just, you know, they stereotype. So sometimes the best way to get past the stereotype is actually to play into it, and then go, no, I'm not him, and they feel kind of weird or whatever. But if you kind of act all insecure in the beginning and be like, no, I'm not that guy, then it kind of just, you know, you look stupid.
How long did you play along with the kid before you told him that you were Chaos and that you weren't Will.i.am or whoever from the Black Eyed Peas?
I don't remember, but I remember at some point, they're like, are you really that guy? And I was like, no, I'm not. She's like, you're not? I was like, no. And then she started laughing, and she's like, apologized or whatever, but it was cool. It was fun for me. It was my way of dealing with, you know, the whole thing. Like, you look just like so-and-so because you have the same complexion and dreads. You know, you go through that a lot. So you kind of have to, you know, learn to make fun of it or you get pretty frustrated sometimes.
Chaos, winding up here, rap. What is a sellout in rap? Would some people say a sellout in rap is using an acoustic guitar? Does that go back to the basics of Kool Herc? Does it go back to the Bronx, Chaos?
Hey, you know what? Lots of kids had acoustic guitars in school in the Bronx, but they're afraid to bring them back home because they didn't want to get harassed in the ghetto. So therefore, they went home and started playing on their parents' turntables, and thus hip-hop started. So to me, it's like the next punk rock step of hip-hop is not being afraid and actually pulling out the acoustic guitar and being like, what? We can do whatever we want. So to me, it's like, you know, pulling out an acoustic guitar is more hip-hop right now than like wearing baggy jeans and trying to look like what's ever going on BET, to me. But, sorry, go ahead.
What other chaosing type acoustic rappers are there? What other rappers have acoustic guitars that you've encountered? Are you one of the first guys?
One of the first cats to really probably come out on that level were the Fugees, and that was Lauren and Wyclef. That's probably why I picked up a guitar, because I saw them on a Rap City, and they were playing their acoustic guitar, and they were freestyling over it. I was like, that's ill. The fact that they are, you know, doing something so in the moment and beautiful, and at the same time embodying all the things that Bob Dylan embodied, like, you know, did Bob Dylan sell out because he plugged in his electric guitar? I don't know. It's like evolution. The question is, can people get with evolution? There's a lot of people doing. There's probably a million kids with acoustic guitars in hip hop, but you know, the record labels don't put them out or people don't see them. So it's probably the faults of, you know, the dinosaurs at the end of the day.
Okay, just quickly, let me get this straight then. So kids used to have acoustic guitars. They got teased, so they switched to turntables.
Well,
so if it wasn't for acoustic guitars, there would be no hip-hop.
There you go. You switched it. See? You're a storyteller, too.
Oh, thank you, Chaos.
No, but at the end of the day, it's like, yeah, man, it wasn't just guitars. It was probably also trombones and anything else that looked corny, you know, logging home from PS57 in the Bronx. People didn't want to do that, so they just went home and dealt with the case and with their dad's old reggae records. It's all good.
And you are?
Chaos.
Chaos, we're here in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And lastly here, I couldn't talk to you in Vancouver without asking about your Vancouver friends, the
Rascals.
No, you were just saying something about how they're huge in South America. What's the deal there?
They're not around right now. They're doing a show in Chile. Because Kimo, the DJ, he's from Chile. And he's like, you know, there's like a 3,000-person concert out there. So they left like 3 days ago.
And tell me a bit more about the Rascals versus Puff Daddy. There's this weird situation regarding Barrington Levy and all these things that they pioneered that end up getting ripped off. What do you think about that? Can you explain a bit about it? Please help me understand that, Chaos.
I mean, I think that was a bit more...
What was it again?
Well, really what happened was the Rascals did this song that I was actually on called Top of the World, Barrington Levy. And then, like, a month later, Shine came out with the song, what was it called? Bad Boys or something like that. And it had Barrington Levy on it. But what had happened was that the manager, well, at the time, Saul, who was a friend of, he was working with Puffy at the time, and I think he must have played Puffy the tape, or no, he didn't play it. The record company in Canada sent Puffy a tape of Barrington Levy, and he was like, to Saul, he was like, yo, this is your group? This is dope. So basically, it was like kind of like, I think Puffy sort of felt that he was close to the Rascals, or that he knew Saul or something, that maybe he thought it would be okay, but there's also a series of things that happened with DMX, or, you know, just weird coincidences.
What was the DMX coincidence?
It was Northern Touch. They end up having, you know, that song came out, and then DMX had Get At Me, I don't know what the song was, but it had the exact same sample as Northern Touch. So, once again, like we were saying before the interview, I think Americans hear these things, but they think, yo, it's in Canada, no one's ever going to hear it anyway, and then they do their own thing, but, you know.
And you yourself ended up Missy Elliotting.
Well, yeah, that was that. I mean, who knows? To me, at the end of the day, it's like the beautiful thing about hip hop. It's just like reggae. There's a time in reggae sometimes when everyone raps on the same beat. It's not really about or on the same rhythm. It's not whether you have a good beat. It's how good you sound on that particular beat that everyone's rocking to. And it's sort of the same thing in hip hop. If something's dope, people are gonna take it and want to rock on it. It's just who can rock the best on it. But I still think the Rascals get bitten, and they're like probably the most genius group that's ever been in Canada, and they constituted everything that I'm about, especially with the elements of hip-hop I learned from being a part of that crew. So definitely people were like checking their style and taking from them. But I still think that at the end of the day, it doesn't matter, because if a music like reggae can survive where three or four different people get on the same beat and
or ska.
Yeah, or ska, and become individuals, then it's nothing in hip-hop beats. So what? The beat sounds the same. You just do your thing on it. Because people are going to bite. It's part of hip-hop. Biting and people hearing something and then going back to the lab and recreating their own version of it is part of hip-hop. So that's why you got to stay ahead of the game, in my opinion, with your skills, and don't let the beats be too important, you know?
And you should go back to the OG masters, Necro. I mean, sorry, not Necro. The OG master.
The Mighty Sparrow right here. Check it out.
Well, thanks so much, Chaos. Anything else you want to add to the people out there at all?
No, man. Just, you're hilarious. This is good.
Well, thanks so much, Chaos. Keep on rocking in the free world and doot-doot-a-loot-doo.
Doot-doot.
They're playing bad, they have me feeling sad. Well, they're playing this.
Why they run for police? 10 criminals attack me outside, Amirama.
10 to 1 is murder.
About 10 in the night on the 5th of October.
10 to 1 is murder.
Way down Henry Street by H.C.M. Walker.
10 to 1 is murder.
Oh, well, the leader of the gang was a hot like a pepper.
10 to 1 is murder.
And every man in the gang had a white handled razor.
10 to 1 is murder.
They say I pushed the girl from Grenada.
10 to 1 is murder.
Well, I back on the Nelly Paul in the gutter.
10 to 1 is murder.
Just imagine my position at the police in the area.
10 to 1 is murder. 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 10 to 1 is murder.
Well, I start to sweat. Man, I'm soaking wet. Mama, so much threats. That's a night I can't forget. 10 of them against me with 50 spectators.
10 to 1 is murder.
And the way they're coming up like they want to devour.
10 to 1 is murder.
But in the heat of the excitement is then I remember.
10 to 1 is murder.
In the next man's pocket I forget me wedger.
10 to 1 is murder.
I don't know what to do, but I just can't surrender.
10 to 1 is murder.
So they go cut me down just as small as pretender.
10 to 1 is murder.
You could imagine how they're planning to dig out me liver.
10 to 1 is murder.
But as the crowds are together I started. Shiva.
10 to 1 is murder.
Hoppa, hoppa.
10 to 1 is murder. 10 to 1 is murder. 10 to 1 is murder. 10 to 1 is murder.
In the still of the night, I was ready in a fright.
Me alone against 10. 10 vicious men, I remember I had a chicken at Mirama.
10 to 1 is murder.
Well, I said to myself that was my last supper.
10 to 1 is murder.
But I get away and I run to the by Johnson Corner.
10 to 1 is murder.
They take off in my skin with big stick and boulder.
10 to 1 is murder.
The fella in front is a very good belter.
10 to 1 is murder.
Bottle and stone falling, but no place to shelter.
10 to 1 is murder.
I hear butter pound the crowds that scatter.
10 to 1 is murder. Yeah.
King Wenceslas last looked out on the feast of Stephen, as the slow ray round about, deep and crispy, brightly showed the booth last night on the musty cruel. Henry Hall and David Lloyd, Betty Grable too.
Hello, this is John speaking with his voice. We're all very happy to be able to talk to you like this on this little bit of plastic. This record reaches you at the end of a really gay year for us, and it's all due to you. When we made our first record on Parlophone towards the end of 1962, we hoped everybody would like what we'd already been our type of music for several years already. But we had no idea of all the gear things in store for us. It all happened, really, when Please Please Me became a number one hit, and after that, well, Court of Blimey's Heather No. Our biggest thrill of the year, well, I suppose it must have been topping the bill at the London Palladium, and then, only a couple of days later, being invited to take part in the Royal Variety Show. This time last year, we were all dead chuffed because Love Me Do got into the top 20. And we can't believe, really, that so many things have happened in between already. Just before I pass you over to Paul, I'd like to say thank you to all the Beatle people who have written to me during the year, and everyone who sent me gifts and cards for my birthday, which I'm trying to forget, in October. I'd love to reply personally to everyone, but I just haven't enough pens. In the meantime, Gary Crimble to you, Gary Mimble to you, Getty Babel, dear Christmas, happy birthday, me too.
This is Paul here. Everything that John said goes for me too, especially the bit about birthday cards and the parcels, because all our homes and offices got stacks of mail last June. Ow! Well, it was my birthday. Anyway, we're all dead pleased by the way you've treated us in 1963, and we're trying to do everything we can to please you with the type of songs we write and record next year. Oh yeah, somebody asked us if we still like Jelly Babies. Well, we used to like them, in fact we loved them, and we said so in one of the papers, you see. Ever since then, we've been getting them in boxes, packets and crates. Anyway, we've gone right off Jelly Babies, you see. But we still like Peppermint Creams and Chocolate Drops and Dolly Mitchells and all those sort of things, don't we?
Yes, yes, oh yes.
Well, lots of people asked us what we enjoy best, you see. Concert and television or recording. We like doing stage shows because, you know, it's great to hear an audience enjoying themselves. But the thing we like best, I think so anyway, is going into the recording studio.
Yeah, lovely. We enjoy that.
Love
very
that,
kindly.
To make new records, which is what we've been doing all day before we started on this special message. Well, what we like to hear most is one of our songs, you know, taking shape in a recording studio. One of the ones what John and I have written. And then listening to the tapes afterwards to hear how it all worked out, you see. Well, I'm running over my time and people are telling me to stop.
Right, stop, go. Stop!
So, I'll finish now with it. Wishing everyone happy Crimble and a Merry New Year, and especially all the ones who paid the subscription.
Ja, das wird und Dankeschön und den Grüß von Eben. Ja, den Grüß von Eben schon. Ja, das wird wunderschön, boy.
Dankeschön.
Ja, Ringo.
Hello, Ringo here. As you know, I was the last member to join the Beatles. I started to play drums in the group 1962. I've been a couple of other groups.
Oh, just wish the people wish merry, happy. Go on for Christmas. Christmas.
Merry, happy New Year. And folks, happy Christmas, and may everything you wish be granted.
Singers Wenceslas, King Wenceslas.
King Wenceslas.
Where good King Wenceslas last looked down on the feast of Stephen, when the snow was on the ground, deep and fist and even.
Thank you, Ringo. Thank you, Ringo. We'll phone you. I'm George Harrison. Nobody else has said anything yet about our fan club secretaries, Anne Collingham and Bettina Rose. Not to mention Frieda Kelly in Liverpool.
Get out, Frieda!
So on behalf of us all, I'd just like to say a great big thank you to Anne, Bettina and Frieda for all the hard work they've done. And we just hope you can go on pleasing you for a long time. Because it's your reaction to our records that really matters. And I'd just like to say, brightly was the shone that night, though the winter cruel, when a pork pie came inside, gathering winter cruel.
Rudolph the reindeer had a very tiny nose, when everybody told him, Mickey the red-nosed negro had a very tiny nose.
Merry Christmas, everybody!
Hello
everybody. This is Paul, and I'd just like to thank you all for buying our records during the past year. We know you've been buying them because the sales have been very good, you see. Don't know where we'd be without you, really, though.
In the army, perhaps.
Oh, we hope you've enjoyed listening to the records as much as we've enjoyed melting them. No, that's wrong. Making them. We're in number 2 studio at the moment at EMI, taping this little message for you.
We are.
We are, indeed. I just thought I'd make the... This is the same studio we've used all along since the old days of Love Me Do. So many years ago, it seems.
Oh, the old of the days.
Well, that's about all, I think. Set to wish you all a happy Christmas and a very new year. Now I'll pass you over to John. John?
John speaking. Thanks all of you who bought me book. Thank you, folks, for buying it. It was very handy. And there's another one out pretty soon, it says here. Hope you buy that too. It'll be the usual rubbish, but it won't cost much. You see? That's the bargain we're going to strike up. I write them in my spare time, it says here. It's been a busy year.
Did you write this yourself?
No. It's somebody's bad hand wrote. It's been a busy year, Beetle Peedles. One way and another, but it's been a great year, too. You fans have seen to that. Page 2. Thanks a lot, folks, and a happy Christmas and a merry good year. Crimble, maybe, and I hand you to George, who'll speak to you. Now!
Thank you, John, thank you.
Hi there!
I'd like to thank all of you for going to see the film. Spect a lot of you saw it more than once.
I did.
Did you? So did I. Thanks anyway, because it makes us very pleased, you know. We had a quiet time making it. Actually, we didn't. We had a great time making it, and we're glad it turned out okay. The next one should be completely different. We start shooting it in February. This time, it's going to be in colour. It'll be a big laugh, we hope. Well, we... big laugh. Yeah,
Bean,
it'll be a big laugh.
You and Megan?
And we may see all of you soon. Hope so. Anyway, all the best in Happy New Year and a Happy Christmas. And here's Ringo.
Thanks, George.
Ringo, yeah? Well, the others have thanked you for the discs and John's book and for everything. Oh, no, for enjoying the film. I'd like to thank you just for being fans. It's been a funny year, you know. One minute we're in England, next we're away. Expect you're wondering where we've been.
So
well, Beetle people, we've been to Australia and America and New Zealand and Australia.
And New Zealand.
Is that New Zealand? So much travelling, but you've stayed loyal, haven't you? Anyway, those airport receptions knocked us out, man, great.
Gig.
Well, that's about it from me. I'd just like to say all the best for Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Christmas is coming. Oh, that reminds me. Let's do a Christmas record.
Let's do a Christmas record.
Yeah, what should we say?
That's a good idea.
We've got to thank everyone. Remember to thank.
Yeah. Thank
you. You can't ad-lib too much because you miss. Well, thank you, Johnny. It's been nice to know you.
Got to thank everyone for all the presents this year.
Yes.
All for buying the records.
Yeah, especially the chewed up pieces of chewing gum and the playing cards made out of knickers.
On behalf of John and I, George speaking, I'd like to thank you for all the Christmas cards and presents and birthday cards and presents and everything too, as well.
On behalf of George and I, I'd just like to thank you all for the Christmas and all the rest of it.
Thank you. Well, Ringo, what have we done this year?
I said we haven't shaved again.
Well, Ringo, what have we done this year?
We've done a lot of things this year, Paul.
Yes.
Well, we've been away.
Yeah.
And like last year.
Yeah, we've come back all right.
Aye, we've had a lot of presents sent to us for our birthdays and Christmases.
We'd like to thank you. Thank you,
thank you for the presents and the cards.
Thank you for the presents.
Happy Christmas to your listeners, where in you crin do. We belong to everybody, don't you nick your new. Oh, wait to the Jack McGregor pan his bunny ho. Hack your bunny Christmas with a pound of Irish stew.
Thank you, John.
Down in the vision with the old black door, we got some, we got some. Down in the vision with the old black door, we got some, we got some.
Forgot and never brought to life. And old acquaintance be forgot all the same. For the sake of old lang syne, my dear, for the sake of old lang syne. For the sake of old lang syne, my dear, for the sake of old lang syne. One upon the two or three.
Well, for the sake of old lang syne, that reminds me, Ringo.
Yes.
Last year,
he was here.
We was here, around the same old mic, same studio.
Same old guitar, same old faces.
It's the same old song, but a different meaning.
Copyright, Johnny.
Copyright, can't say that.
Hey, yeah, all right, what are we going to do? What's out of copyright?
How about we'll get the lilacs in an old brown shoe?
Yeah, yes, that's out of copyright.
But,
let's play a request for all the boys in B-A-O-R-E.
Yeah, all right.
What should we play for them? Because we got some fans in the forces.
Well, here in Munich, it's not quite as fine as it is in London.
Well, Kenneth, the weather's raining here. It's not very good.
Oh, it's not bad over here, but some, you know, we've had a bit of rain and all that.
Yeah. Stay tuned in. It's five-way link-up.
If you've enjoyed this program, tune to 29314567 megacycles. If you can't find that, drop it.
She's off. Be a queen. Be a goddamn liver. Brought to him. China. Down in Vietnam. And China. And look at all those bodies. Jordan. China. Floating in the river. Jordan.
That looks as though it's about it for this
year.
Well,
that should cover Israel.
We certainly tried our best to...
Please everybody.
Please everybody. If we haven't done what we could have done, we've tried.
And if you haven't got yours, send fourpence in and get a free one.
And seeing as we gather around the Christmas microphone here in the studio, we might as well get together with a little Christmas message for you.
Which goes something like this.
Christmas comes but once a year, but when it does, you know it's here because we've got some.
Singing.
Christmas comes but once a year, but when it does, it brings good cheer because we've got some. Christmas.
Yesterday you are all my troubles in so far away. Now it looks as though the hitch is day.
Oh, bless
you all on Christmas Day.
Christmas Day is just another
year. A big year for us.
Christmas Day.
One of our biggest years. Since we can remember
Christmas Day,
we can remember a lot of big years. Take bugs.
Christmas Day.
Christmas Day.
And especially those abroad and those of you in BOR 2456978783.
Christmas Day.
There's a lot of us here, one of which a lot of you there, and the weather's perfectly all right, thank you. And don't forget, the old and the new, some folks blue and some folks green. You take no notice of them, it's an all-white policy in this group.
Yesterday, all my troubles seem so far away. Now it looks as though they're here to stay. Bless you all on Christmas Day.
Brings good cheer. So don't
Christmas Day. I'm the last of
my I faded there, Charlie.
Okay, put the red eyes off.
Now, this is Johnny Rhythm just saying good night to you all and God bless you.
All right, well, that's got it done then. What are we going to do now?
Has he turned it off?
I think he has. Have you turned it off, lad?
Hey, Basher.
And they're still the same.
Turned it off, Basher.
this is a big hi and a sincere Merry Christmas from yours truly, Ringo Starr.
Happy New Year, Happy Christmas, Happy Easter, Happy Autumn, Happy Michaelmas, everybody. Happy Christmas, everybody, to you. I'd like to wish everybody Happy Christmas this year of 1968, going on 69. Happy Christmas, Happy New Year, all the best to you from here. I'd like to wish everybody Happy Christmas, Happy New Year. From there to here, Happy New Year, Happy New Year, Happy New Year, Happy New Year.
Once upon a time, there were two balloons called Jock and Yono. They were strictly in love, bound to happen in a million years. They were together, man. Unfortunate timetable, they seemed to have previous experience, which kept calling them one way or another. You know how it is. But they battled on against overwhelming oddities, including some of their beast friends. Being in love, they clung together even more, man, but some of the poisonous monster of outdated busload hip throwers did stick slightly, and they occasionally had to resort to the dry cleaners. Luckily, this did not kill them, and they weren't banned from the Olympic Games. They lived hopefully ever after, and who could blame them?
Well, here we are again. Another fab Christmas. Christmas time is here again. Ain't been round since last year.
And we'd like to take this opportunity, all the way from America, to say Happy Christmas to you, our faithful, beloved fans all over the world who have made our life worth living. And over here I have Mr. Malcolm Edmonds, who's through thick and thin, would surely like to say a word of greeting at this festive occasion.
Merry Christmas, children everywhere.
At the third stroke, it will be
Ringo Starr.
Good evening.
Hello, me dear. I didn't know you were coming.
I'm not surprised.
Well, I am. Certainly am.
I would have thought so myself.
Well, if you ask me, I think it's insane.
Occasionally.
Yes, me too. Twice a week sometimes.
14 and 6.
19 and 5 for safety, if you don't mind.
Yes, sir.
Don't you say yes to me. I'm telling you.
It's a private line, you know.
Private line? I've been on this line for 2 years.
Well, it's my proud pleasure tonight to introduce one of the most versatile performers in our career. And he's come all the way from Stokely Carmichael's on sea. And I hope you're going to like him. Let's give him a big hand.
Happy New Year, Happy Christmas, Happy Easter, Happy Autumn, Happy Michaelmas, everybody. Happy Christmas, everybody, to you.
Once upon a pool table, there lived a short-haired butcher's boy by the way of Ostergrad. It comes in sentence, cesspool, Alwick Airport. Her father was, in a long story cut short, in the middle of his life sentence. We're indebted to the colloquial office for its immediate disposal of Ronowitz, including, I might add, hot vertelliver tutem. On the other hand, bag, I mean to say, L'amore nous sommes toujours realistic. Please speaking, for this film is about an hourglass houseboat. The full meaning of Winchester Cathedral defies description. Their loss was our Gainsborough nil.
The sound of a manservant tile detected the lasting barred up in a lovely garry day and time. How close can you get his begging at the under the council originally a bad feeling?
Court!
We have a special guest here this evening, Mr. Tiny Tim. I'd like to ask him to say a few words.
Oh, hello to you nice Beatles. It's so wonderful, and what a thrill it is talking here in Mr. Harrison's presence, Mr. Weiss's presence, and all his nice, wonderful friends. And the thing is, I just want to say Merry Christmas to you all, and a Happy New Year.
Oh, thank you, Tony. Would you like to sing us a little song?
Oh, I love to. Here's a song I did in 1966 in front of Miss Jill for the first time. And I did this in Albert Hall, and what a thrill it was to do this then and now. Exactly, I did it then. Here's a...
We want sexy glass on Mars.
Happy, happy, happy.